And I think it's time for us to stand. I'm sure everybody has heard you now. I'm sure we can sit around the table, all of us. Mm-hmm. Those who want to sit there, those who have finished eating. Yeah, there are members that are coming, but we might have to exchange this as they are coming in. Okay. So we can sit. Are we all have all? Everybody has had tea. Everyone has tea or drink. Obviously not wine, but just ordinary drink. I'm worried about Derekhan. I thought he was having wine there. You must watch out, Derekhan. This is Cape Town. There's a lot of wine in Cape Town. Members, let's start. Members, this is once again, I take it that this is the last meeting that we're going to have for this year, unless there's an urgent meeting that might crop up. And we've come to that time of the year, which is the end of the year. It has been a long 6 months since we came into the parliament, and most of us are new in this committee. So I'm sure there's a lot of mistakes that we've done in being new, not knowing what to do. But I suspect that a lot of good things that we've done in the 6 months that we've been in the committee. Yeah. But be it that may, we need to look at as individuals as to how much have we contributed to making the lives of our people better than they were the previous years. And as somebody who's chairing this committee, I might have done wrong things, I might have done good things, but if I've done some wrong things, do pardon me. It's because partly I didn't know how to run. I was very new, but partly some of the things, some of us are very passionate about bettering the lives of our people. So some of the mistakes you make them because you want to better the lives of the people, and in so doing you might get overboard. So it's an apology if there have been things that have been very bad, but if there are things that have been very good, I think let's take it that we built on those good things that we have done. I had hoped that we were going to organize something for the members since it's the last day for us, but unfortunately this trip that made me to go to Ghana took me out of line, so we have not organized anything. But let's hope that next year, obviously the 5 years won't be finished, so we'll still be here. So next year we'll try and make sure that we do something towards the end of the year. I would have liked that we looked as a committee as to the things that we have done so that we improve on them next year. But I'm not sure whether, definitely won't have that time, but maybe when we start next year, we'll have to try and look at what we have done this year so that we improve on them in the following year. I want to thank Honorable Suleiman for chairing the meeting last week. I was away, I was in Ghana. I'm going to give you a report as to what happened in Ghana. I was invited by the researchers, the scientists, and they were talking about maternal mortality, and they wanted politicians or policymakers to be part of that that conference that they had in Ghana. The good thing is that when I was there, I'm too deaf, so people thought I was from Ghana myself. But I had to keep on telling them that no, I'm from South Africa, I'm not from Ghana. They were looking at my color and they thought I was part of the people there. So thank you very much for holding on the fort for me. Now it's going to be the time. I'm not sure whether the members have got the agenda, but the agenda is a very simple one. We are just going to have the NHLS presenting to us, and after that we'll have discussion. After that discussion, we'll have tea. We still want you back after tea. And then after that tea, you'll be able to leave. And then after that, we'll have the Council for Medical Aid Schemes talking to us. And after that, there'll be discussion soon after lunch. And then that'll be the end of the meeting. We're hoping that as it is the end of the year, everybody's in a holiday mood. We won't be very difficult, but we want you to be honest and straightforward and just be to the point and help us in trying to improve the lives of our people. I see there are some people from the department here who are going to be asking questions too. There are pertinent questions that will be going to them. So welcome, department. The people that are here, NHLS, we'll introduce ourselves as the members. I am Vivian Kokwana, who happens to be the chairperson of this portfolio committee. So you'll start with down telling them who you are.
Kimang Ibrahim Suleiman from the Northern Cape, work of this committee. Thank you.
Malebokeng Dube, known as Grace, Portfolio Committee Health from Gauteng Province, deployed here nationally.
Borosi Sekgale Disoy from Northwest, a member of Parliament and member of Committee Health. Thanks.
Hilda Msweli from KZN, a member of the Health Committee. Thank you.
Mark Waters from Gauteng.
I'm Fadi Khanara from the Free State.
Akwana Chular from the Ministry of Health.
I didn't see you.
Moremi Nkosi, Department of Health.
Yaman Tlay, Department of Health.
Joe Kata, Ministry of Health.
You are the leader of the Ministry of Health, Joe. Okay. Those are the members in the Department of Health. So maybe we'll give over to you, NHLS. You can introduce yourself and then go on straight to the presentation.
Okay, thank you.
Dari Kisnasamy, heading Cancer Registry and Occupational Health within the NHLS.
I'm Johnny Mufuking, Executive Manager for the Northland Branch.
I'm Dave Area, Chief Financial Officer.
Sipuma Shati, Regional Member, NHLS.
I have entered in the NHLS. Karen Beck, Acting Executive Manager for Academic Relations Research and Quality Assurance.
Good morning, I'm Lindy Wamavuso, acting in the position of marketing and communication at NHLS.
Morning, my name is Patrick Lutrava, Executive Manager for the Coastal Region, which is Eastern and Western Cape.
Good morning, I'm Kulalo Ndebele, Company Secretary for the NHLS.
Good morning, I'm Sirius Michas, Executive Manager for Information Technology at NHLS.
Hello,
I'm
Is that all? Who's beyond you?
Okay,
Nobunda. No, she's too small, so I don't know. Okay, so the department gives you some money to do work. Now, we want you to account for that money. So how are you handling it? And is it making the impact that you want it to make? Thank you.
Honorable Chair, Dr. Kukwana, thank you very much. Honorable members, it's a privilege and a pleasure for us to share the annual report for the last for 2008-2009. Just before I get into the presentation, Honorable Chair, I bring greetings and apologies from the chairperson of the board, Advocate Cersei Bullock. She was going to join us today during the presentation. Unfortunately, she had to go to court urgently and at the last minute on the council, so if I can extend her apologies. The Chair, I thought you said we're going into a holiday mood, so the questions are going to be less tough. So already you started off with a tough one. We consciously brought, Chair, the senior management team of NHLS. I hope you don't get a sense that this matter is going to go to the board, because if it is, then I'm sorry, we're going to be the dominant group in this room. But, Chair, thank you very much for this opportunity. What I'm going to do is obviously the annual reports have been circulated 2 months ago, so you all have copies of the annual report. There are additional copies if members don't have any with them. We then also circulated the actual presentation itself. What I am going to do, Chair, is just focus on some of the slides. I don't think we'll go through every one of them in detail. And the presentation will look at three parts. We basically will be looking at the four components of NHLS and share some of the highlights in the first part of the presentation. Then to share with you some of the areas that we had difficulty in achieving our targets, and explain what were the reasons for the not achieving the targets, and also share with you what our plans going forward so that we ensure that we meet our targets in subsequent years. So, Chair, order. Sorry, Chair, my apologies. Oh, there we are. No. Okay, there we are. My apologies, Chair. Okay. Just to remind ourselves, you recall that we were here earlier this year, and so we shared with you at that point what the strategic direction for NHLS was. And in that, we had identified 7 areas that we thought were priority in terms of where NHLS used to be and where we wanted to focus in the last financial year. The first issue we had identified, Chair, has been absolutely critical, was the whole question around putting our customers, which is the provincial departments of health, at the center of everything that we do. And I'll talk about it in the slides as we go through. The second was the whole issue around strengthening our stakeholder relations, particularly the relationships with the National Department of Health, Provincial Department of Health, and the Faculties of Health Sciences. The third area was to give greater focus and attention to building stronger and more meaningful academic relations. And you'll recall at the time, Chair, we had identified that although we've been set up primarily to provide service, but in fact the service is largely dependent on having very strong academic relations from the perspective of producing high-quality pathologists, technologists, scientists, etc. So we elevated the status of the academic relations. And then the whole issue around the people and the difficulty around attracting people within the organization. And it's really about creating an enabling environment for staff to grow professionally and to be more creative and innovative in responding to the issues, Chair, that you've introduced in the first part of introducing this meeting. And then the whole question around NHLS being an employer of choice for young health professionals and choosing NHLS as the organization that they want to be associated with. The next point talks to the issue around research, because remember there are 3 mandates that NHLS has. It's a service mandate, it's a teaching mandate, and it's a research mandate. And this area was to reposition research to be more appropriate and relevant from a policy and practice point of view. And then the last issue, and probably certainly for where we sit at the moment, the most important issue, is about exploring ways in which we can provide a more cost-effective service to our customers, being the provinces. This is going to wrong button. I suggest, Honorable Chair, the, with respect to the last financial year, we made a tremendous contribution into the public health system in three areas. Helping doctors and health professionals in general to determine a diagnosis for millions of patients across the country. We've conducted groundbreaking research that impacts directly on service delivery, and the later slides will talk to that. And obviously, we've been actively involved together with our academic partners on the training of the next generation of pathologists, scientists, medical technicians, technologists, etc. Now, this part of the presentation really talks to the four regional offices that we have, and it talks specifically to the service delivery, I think, successes that we've had. As we sit at the moment, we're sitting with the big priorities for us are HIV and TB. So we're now sitting with 70 CD4 sites across the country. We're sitting with 21 viral load sites across the country, 11 HIV PCR sites, and 15 TB culture sites. And that's quite a significant improvement on the previous the previous 3 years. Chair, we put this slide here, and it really talks to the issue of the growth in service delivery over the last three financial years. And if you look at the the green is 0809. For some reason we got it upside down. The green is 0809. It's 0708 and 0607. But it's really making the point about volumes have grown quite significantly over the 3 years. The demand for service. And that's looking at specimens. And if you're looking at volume itself, again, you can see the significant growth. And it makes the point, Chair, remember the concern that provinces have is about the affordability question. And we put in the slide just, and there are Department of Health officials here as well. It's really to make the point that a lot of the burden, the financial burden on the provinces, are not related to price increases, but they're really related to the significant growth demand for pathology services in the public health system. So, I'm not sure why. So, again, these slides, the next couple of slides talk to volume growth. If we're looking at TB microscopy, and we presented 4 years figures, obviously we're looking at this year now in terms of the reporting year. But we, in 2005, 2006, the number of tests that we had done was around 2 million. It's now sitting at 3.1 million. And if you're looking at this table here, which is the current year, by the end of the financial year, we were most significantly up. The same with TB culture test volumes, considerable growth, 407. We're now sitting at 832. And that also talks to the issue around NHLSA having to scale up to respond to this additional demand. CD4, same trend, quite significant growth from 804 in 2005 to 1.8 million in the year under review. Viral loads, again, you can see quite significant growth there as well. And PCR, same trend. Just in terms of daily PHC coverage, because that's an area of concern here from the provinces, we provided figures for 2007 and 2008-2009. Currently, the four regions that we have, you'll recall at the last presentation, NHLSA is structured around four regions. The central region is part of Gauteng, Free State, and Northern Cape. The northern region is Northwest, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga. KZN is a region on its own, and Coastal is made up of Western Cape and Eastern Cape. But if you're looking at daily coverage now for the primary health care clinics, in 2005, we were 95%. Well, Gauteng this region is mainly urban, so it's still at 95. Northern went from 85 to 95. KZN chair used to be at 52. This was at the point that it was run by the KZN province. But currently, we're at 69. It's still not anywhere near what is acceptable. But remember, KZN became part of NHLS quite late in 2005. relation to the rest of the country. And then coastal as well is not anywhere what it should be. There has been an improvement in terms of daily coverage, but it's still sitting at 65, and in this current financial year, it's getting serious attention. This table really talks to the turnaround time. You can, the bars here is looking at volume growth, so you can see significant volume growth in each of the regions. It's set up by region. But the important point is that our turnaround times, which the red was in 2005, and this graph here is looking at where we are in 2009. And you can see the significant improvement in turnaround times. But notwithstanding that, Chair, there's still a lot more work that we need to do around turnaround times. Then I want to talk a little bit around the National Institute of Communicable Diseases. And I think that this is the institute that probably enjoys the highest profile within the table, so to speak. And largely because of the kind of our work around the outbreaks. And during this period, there's been extensive outbreaks in avian flu, arena flu, meningitis, etc. And NICD has played an outstanding role in all of those areas. And the media reported extensively on that, and particularly now around H1N1, NICD has been actively and very busy with that area of work. So just kind of list some of the work that happened during the financial year, from cholera to measles, and we got some figures there. But it just gives you an idea of the breadth of work that on outbreak responses that NICD has been involved in. Just in terms of research share, just for the year, we're reporting for the year, publications, there were 76 publications that came out of the NICD, conference presentations, 103 internationally and 49 nationally, and with respect to their contribution to producing the next generation, 17 graduate degrees, graduate and postgraduate, 5 of them were PhDs, 7 MSCs, 4 BSCs, and 1 diploma. And this was just for the financial year under review. And then we currently have registered for higher degrees, 28 people, and there's a breakdown there. Chair. We listed these two programs because they're quite critical in terms of the role that NICD plays with respect to training. Particularly with respect to HIV and TB. The HLS program was established in this financial year, and it was established with funding from CDC. And the 5 courses were run. The programs are around TB, HIV, laboratory diagnostics. And in addition to South Africans that were involved, we've also had students from 14 African countries. So part of NICD's responsibility is to support what's happening outside of South Africa. This program, Chair, is quite critical because we're looking at field epidemiology and epidemiology in general. There's a dearth of expertise. This program is attempting to provide training in an MSc, and the first cohort of 10 graduates came in 2008. The first group is, in fact, qualified this year. And between NHLS, and the National Department of Health, we've been able to absorb the first group. But the point is that as we continue to train individuals, the importance of this, because we're putting the field epidemiologists within the lab so that we don't parachute people in every time there's an outbreak. So we got people on the ground. But the issue is going to be for the provinces and for the national department to provide employment opportunities for these individuals. They're not going to be able to hire by national health laboratory services alone. This just lists some of the monthly reports that come up, the bulletins that come out of NICD, and the detail we can pick up in questions here. So the next area is focusing on some of what they identified as strategic issues. The big issue is around funding for surveillance programs, and obviously the National Department at the moment provides funding. But over the last 2 years, we've seen a decreased trend in terms of funding from the National Department to NICD. But fortunately, NHLS has been able to cover the difference in funding. But we flag that as an issue. And we've also been looking to extend the donor funding with respect to that. so that we can protect some of these programs. NICD has also looked at web-based facilities for information dissemination. Clearly, a lot of information is produced. There's some valuable data, and they're going to be focusing at making that access to that data more user-friendly and make it accessible to more people within the country and outside the country, because it has implications for the African continent as well. And the whole issue around coordination with the Department of Health and the National Field Epidemiology, I've already touched on that. And then we're looking at collaboration. The Health Protection Agency in the UK is the kind of NHLS equivalent. And so we're looking at building partnerships with some of those institutes so that we're learning from some of the mistakes and successes that we're seeing in the UK NHS, for example. The other area is training is becoming quite critical. We talked about ACAS and EPLTP. And so we want to invest money using grant funding to set up on-site dormitory facilities for our own staff and Department of Health staff, but also people traveling from other parts of the country. And then upgrading our WHO reference laboratories for influenza and polio. And then this whole issue around e-learning platform I'll touch a little later, Chair. Then to come to NIOH. NIOH at the moment is doing some outstanding work, but it's the profile of the institution, Chair, is quite low. So we want to raise that profile, and we've been very privileged to have... to have Dr. Kishnaswamy, who is now heading up the institute. And the work that is being done, it kind of lists the areas of work that we're doing, public and private sectors, including NGOs and trade unions we're supporting. There's work around pathology, disease ex-minors. Then on occupational medicine, clinical specialist referral services are offered, surveillance, ergonomic assessments, immunology, and microbiology. So that kind of lists the areas of work that's happening. Occupational hygiene, work done on risk assessment and hazard management, analytical services and toxicology, information services in those areas around offering query handling, resource center, and electronic journals across NHLS. The slide here really talks to disease rates per 1,000 autopsies, and it kind of, again, if we're looking at the growth, because we provided figures for 1998 and 2008, and this is the year that is under review, we're seeing the kind of high increase in each of those. But perhaps a little later, Barry can just talk to the slide, the detail around the slide. Then with the research chair, NIOH plays a role in supporting postgraduate training, honors, masters, and PhDs. Special emphasis on the mining sector, also construction and health sector, and then there are scientific peer-reviewed publications that are coming out of NICD, and the issue around translation of science for popular use, so looking at how do we influence policy and practice. Then on education and training. Training is provided in occupational medicine, occupational hygiene, and pathology. Continued education development, there are short courses, updates, journal clubs, support to universities, professional groups, government, private sector, and trade unions. Training provided to those categories. And then support for training also in SADC, so several SADC areas, SADC countries that are participating. So just in terms of areas of concern that have been identified here by NIOH, silicosis and TB in the mining sector is a major problem. In fact, Barry just did a presentation a couple of days ago. And if we're looking at TB in particular, the individuals that are in the mining sector, it's three times higher in that sector than in the general population. And obviously, there are serious implications with respect to that. But perhaps under questions, Barry may want to talk a little bit around that. That's not my area of expertise. Then the issue around HIV and the workplace.
Sorry, that's a minute again. Can there's a member that is sitting at the back there. If you could organize a space for her. That's one member. Sorry,
That's fine, Chair. Then NIOH, Chair, has not put in have not done any work on HIV in the workplace, and that's an important area of work. And so this is going to be flagged, and Barry would be spending, putting in a lot of time in strengthening the program around HIV and the workplace. Then the big issue here is around fragmentation, and in working with the other departments, other government departments, we think fragmentation of policy, legislation, organization, and delivery system. And again, I think that from our side, I think that we have the ability for convening power is to start playing a much more proactive role in ensuring that there's better coordination and influencing some of these processes. Then the big area of concern is that the lack of involvement of trade unions in a lot of the work that's happening within NIOs. And again, we're flagging that as an area for the future. And also the issue around SMEs and the informal sector, because the focus is on the formal sector, but large numbers of our people are in the SME sector and the informal sector. So we need to look at occupational health and safety programs for those two sectors as well, because they're an important part of the economy of South Africa. Then the issue around occupational health services, Chair, and I mean the one thing that we have picked up immediately is that although we had NIOH within NHLS, but we were not using that expertise. So for our own workers now, to look at that, and also for Parliament, Chair, I don't know whether there's a program for people in this room and for other politicians, but to look at how do we support the public sector, and there's some discussion with the Department of Public Service and Administration now around that, and also around public entities, because that's also a huge potential for revenue for NIOH to sustain some of the programs that we're running at the moment. So if public entities and the rest of the public sector could also contribute to some of the programs, then it also ensures that we can respond to the greater need that's out there. And then the last issue around, there's going to be significant investments in public works, expanded public works programs. But an important component of that is occupational health and safety. And shouldn't they push percentage of the budget that's allocated for the expanded public works program be set aside for NIOH to focus on some of the activities? So it's really focusing, this slide is talking to what should be happening in this year and years to come. Then within NIOH, Chair, is the National Cancer Registry. So we've located it there. Now this is one of the areas, unfortunately, that we've not been able to produce reports. The last report that was done was 1995 to 2005. And out of that, we found that cancer is the fourth leading cause of death in South Africa. But it's an area that we've kind of raising the profile of. Unfortunately, there was a period, during the period under review, we had, there were leadership vacuums because the head of the unit had left. And so this area did not get sufficient attention. Barry would be giving a lot of focus on that. But basically, the unit was started in 1986. There's a staff of 12 people. It's a very small team, but it's an important area of work. It's currently passive pathology-based registry, and we need to move to a more population-based registry. As I said, the last report that was produced was in 2001, and we need to update it, but it's been problematic in the sense that currently the legislation although we've assisted with a draft legislation, but remember, the private sector, most of the private sector is not contributing to the data. And we've also had some problems within NHLS itself in terms of getting the data. So we've not been able to produce the latest reports with respect to that, partly because we're not getting the information as well. But the new legislation should sort that out. I'm going to skip this slide we're doing research on exposures that lead to cancer, TB, HIV, and tobacco. If you look at that now, I'm not going to run through that now because there are a couple other things I'm going to cover later on. This slide is really, although it doesn't talk to the year under review, Chair, but I thought since we have this opportunity with the committee, just to look at the total number of cancers reported to the National Cancer Registry. The issue is that breast currently is number one, used to be number two, is number one. And then if you're looking at Kaposi sarcoma, which was, you know, basically unheard of before, but it's now moved up to number 9 in terms of ranking. And obviously you're aware that that's related to the HIV issue. This slide talks to leading cancers amongst men. It's 2001 figures. Unfortunately, we've not been able to update that. But again, if you're looking at it, it's done by race. Number 1, prostate. The leading cancers amongst women, cervix in African women, breast in the other three race groups. This is just talking about the massive growth in Kaposi sarcoma. Chair, pap smears, I just wanted to make one point with respect to this slide. If we're looking at this figure here, and I'm going to focus particularly around Soweto, of the 86 individuals here that had pap smears, only 29 of them, 86 were diagnosed with cancer. Only 29 of them had pap smears in the last 2 years. And that's 1 in 3. And that really talks to the issue around the gap from the response to this problem from the provincial service delivery point of view. And obviously in terms of the gap, and I'll show you another slide now in terms of the target that was set up. If we're looking at here, cervical cytology screening, again, although the numbers have gone up quite considerably, but remember, Chair, there's still the earlier slide is showing you that a very small number are actually having the screening done, despite the fact that there are huge growth. This is the slide that talks to the number of people that were diagnosed. The number that were diagnosed with cancer is a small number, but essentially this is a group that we need to protect. Because if we intervene with prevention programs now, then we ensure that this group doesn't end up down there. I'm going to skip these because this is really shocking to... Then to go to the next area, Chair, it's talking to the academic training part of NHS mandate. We do the training in partnership with the 8 faculties of health sciences. There are bilateral agreements that we sign with each of the faculties of health sciences. And, Chair, this is one of those targets that we, in fact, didn't meet. We had 50% of the bilateral agreements signed. In this current year, we are aggressively trying to get the other 50% signed. So we've not been able to meet that target, and it's largely been that we've just been overwhelmed with other things. And so this didn't get the priority, but this doesn't affect training in any way. The training is obviously continuing. You should be 9 universities. But what we've done is, with respect to the umbrella agreement that we have with each of the universities, because the umbrella agreement is more a philosophical document, we've extended those umbrella agreements by 12 months to allow us to get into the detail around what are the posts that we have, how does funding go, who pays for what, etc. So just with respect to publications, Chair, I think this is the area that we've done phenomenally well. For the year under review, we've seen a 30% increase compared to the previous years. This just lists the publications by specialty, so that you get an idea of the number of publications overall. Then, Chair, the big issue, this slide here really talks to the issue around our customer care. And if you recall the presentation that we did early in the year, we did say that there were certainly the perception amongst our customers was fairly negative with respect to NHLS. And we had agreed to do a customer satisfaction survey at the time. Unfortunately, by the end of the financial year, we couldn't complete the entire study. This is really what we had eventually done was did a pilot in clinics and hospitals across the country. And this kind of gives us a sense of what is the perception, and I stress, Chair, that there is a perception from the provincial perspective. And obviously the figures are quite worrying. Because if we're looking at the average, these are the dimensions that we measured. The good news is that at least from a reliability point of view, the majority are satisfied with the reliability of the tests that we do. So that's a good thing. But overall, we're concerned about this figure, because if you're looking at on average for all of these dimensions, we're sitting with a combined of 54%, and clearly that's unacceptable. So we either have to do one of two things. Where there are real problems, we'll have to fix them. And in this financial year, when we see you the next time, we'll report on what's happening. But we'll have to fix them. But if it is just simply an issue of perception, then clearly the information sharing becomes quite critical. And the communication part of it becomes quite critical. But it is a worrying area. And if you're looking at KZN, and KZN, remember, joined us last, so that may be part of the explanation. But we're sitting at 49%. So certainly the perception there, and Che, you will recall that KZN didn't come in kind of applauding their involvement with NHLS. So we got to do a lot of work with KZN with respect to turning that around. And that work's already started. So quality assurance, and clearly this is an important part. Quality assurance, both external and internal, is we have a very strong unit within NHLS, and we put a lot of energy on that. And if you look at this side, if you're looking at the new accreditation, you can see significant growth in terms of the lab accreditation. So we see percentage increase of academic and regional labs, quite positive, and we met our targets with respect to that. Increase year-on-year score for functional audits, we met our targets there. The difficulty is around the PT schemes, the proficiency testing. Now, the proficiency testing, as a general rule, we should be achieving 100%. Is it really is an internal measure of whether or not we're meeting quality standards. Unfortunately, Chair, we've not been able to meet those targets. But they've been a combination of factors, although we've done quite well, but they've been a combination of factors which ranges from equipment downtime. So the equipment may not be working, we may not be able to get our results back from the evaluation. The other side is that we've also had difficulty with the small labs. They're very small teams of people, and this staff shortages create a huge problem. But notwithstanding that, this is an important part for you, and we want to achieve the 100% target. So in this year, there's huge effort for us to be much more directive and following up when we're not getting information back from the regional lab. So just around the academic teaching, Chair, we flagged at the meeting in April this year when we met with you, was the lack of a 10-year plan to inform the pipeline with respect to our needs going forward. Because the Department of Health has developed their HR plan. Unfortunately, with respect to pathology professionals, which includes pathologists, technologists, technicians, scientists, etc., we don't have a 10-year plan. And we flagged that, and the work is only just beginning on that area of priority. Then the issue around, obviously, we with respect to the strategic challenges, we got the same challenges that the rest of the market has and the rest of the public health system has with respect to rural-urban divide, public-private, because we're competing with the private sector, and the private sector, remember, they hire their pathologists and they make them partners within these practices. So we just can't compete from a salary point of view. And obviously the international migration of health workers abroad, etc., is creating its own stresses for us. And the point that we have flagged at the last meeting is that there's the increased feminization of the workforce. And we need to look at how do we reconfigure the workplace to accommodate women. Because currently, 70% of people that are in training, the pathology training and in technology, mainly women now. So we need to look at how do we provide for that and ensure that we can use this actually to our advantage in terms of making it attractive for people to work within NHLS. Then the research part of it, now we kind of talked about the unfunded mandate, but there's a discussion at the moment with the Department of Health about how do we fund these two parts and whether or not we should be exploring some form of conditional grant. We largely, currently, most of the research activities is largely grant-funded, although the National Health Laboratory Service has a health research trust with a 100 million rand investment in that, and the interest is used. But it's basically dependent on grant funding. And currently, the kind of focus is more on measuring outcomes, the number of publications. And, Chair, we want to, in the next coming years, is to begin to focus around impacts and outcomes. It should be outcomes. So that's the kind of focus. So looking at the research that we're doing, how is it impacting on policy and practice? I think a lot of the work at the moment is, but we don't know for sure because we've not put anything into understanding that set. So just to get to the support services chair, the human resources is the biggest, the nature of our business is that it's people-driven. Everything is, although technology is beginning to play a much more important role, but people is what makes the organization tick. Not dissimilar to the rest of the public health system. For the year, 5,500 was invested in training and skills development because this is an absolutely critical area for us. If we're going to be able to retain people and if we are going to stay at leading edge, and because of the way technology is changing, it's absolutely crucial that we invest. And 5.5 million was invested there. During the year under review, we had employed 1,092 registrars, interns, medical scientists, and training in technology, and at a cost of 174 million rand. Now we're hoping that, depending on the discussion with the Department of Health, this may be an area that may come in the form of a conditional grant going forward, because that's also, remember, this is something that the provinces have to pay for with respect to the people service. Bursaries chair, and we prioritize bursaries because we're having great difficulty attracting individuals, so we're using bursaries as a potential lever to lock people into NHLS. And during the year, we had provided 165 undergraduate bursaries at universities and technicons at a cost of 1.3 million rand. Then we've seen significant improvement this year, Chair. We're in fact very proud of this achievement. With respect to the pass rate for medical technologies, we've seen an increase from 51% to 69%. Now, again, that's not anywhere near what it should be. But with the universities of technology, we're trying to increase that. But notwithstanding that, it's quite a phenomenal increase in 1 year. And the important thing is for students that are with NHLS, with all of those students' pass rate compared to the rest of the industry, we're 4% above the national average. Then the recruitment drive was intensified, and we talked about using an outside, we're using a company now to look at NHLS branding and attracting quality students. There's one of the ways in which we can sort out this pass rate as well. Is unfortunately, Chair, at this point in time, for technology. Technology is the fourth or fifth choice when it comes to the careers. So people who have C pluses are choosing medicine first, then dentistry, then BSc, then whatever, and then it's technology. So it's not something that you're choosing as your first choice as a career option. So we've been investing quite a bit of money to look at how do we get people to understand what pathology is about and get pathology to be chosen as a profession, as a number one choice in terms of what they want to do. And we invested money, and there's a program with 100 schools across South Africa at the moment, so that people understand, students understand from while they're still at school, what exactly is pathology services and why they can play a critical role there. And then our skills plan was submitted and approved by the Department of Labor. We have an employment equity plan in place. Affirmative action measures and numerical targets are detailed. I'll talk about it in a few minutes' time. Black registrars, Chair, while it continues to be a challenge, but we've seen an increase from 31% to 51% in line with our EEE drive at the moment, and that's a conscious program on the part of NHLS. The medical sciences at the moment predominantly female, 77%, with 36% being African females. So again, while it's not anywhere near, we're having quite a bit of difficulty attracting African professionals in general into scientific positions. And again, we're talking to the universities to look at a joint program on how we can make this much more attractive and much more sexy for people to choose as a profession. But notwithstanding that, we've seen that 36% of them of scientists are now African women. Then medical technologists continue to be dominated by African women, 60%. And this area is not so much of a problem in terms of attracting Africans, but a problem with respect to attracting other race groups. We're just not getting high interest there. Currently, of the 12 executive posts, Chair, race and gender has improved significantly, and you can see everyone in the room, so it speaks for itself.
Of the 12 executive management positions, race gender profile has improved quite significantly in the last 12 months. And promotions are predominantly among black employees. 86% of all promotions that took place in the year under review were black professionals. Overall headcount shares increased the overall headcount increased as a result of an increase in the number of pathologists, medical officers, registrars, medical technologists, and student medical technicians. Our retention of core staff continues to be a challenge for the reasons that I've already cited: money, infrastructure. We're still having difficulty around getting people to go into rural areas, etc. And the mechanism, but we put in mechanisms for career development and recognition of individual efforts are in place. So we have career ladder progression so that individuals don't have to start abandoning their profession to move up the career ladder. So we found a way in which we can keep pathologists. They can move up but stay within pathology as opposed to becoming executives or moving into HR and moving into other areas from a career point of view. And that program is working, it's kind of only just taking off, but it's working reasonably well. 60% of all terminations, Chair, we looked at the terminations at the moment to try and understand why is it that people are leaving NHLS. It's largely related to remuneration, and I have pointed out it's very difficult for us to compete with private and international markets, and condition of employment in general, and then there are some people that are just looking at career change. Now, that obviously is hard to influence. But these two areas we need to give serious attention to. And just with respect to governance and management, we have an HR committee of the NHLS board, and the HR committee plays a very integral role with respect to leading performance, because we have very effective performance benchmarks in place, because all ours are outputs and driven at the moment. We'll move towards outcomes driven, but the board plays a critical role in reviewing performance of senior executives and also taking in the pot with respect to the rest of the organization. The executive management at the moment, in addition to the 5 executive management placements reported, we filled a further 2 posts during the period under review. And there are 2 vacancies at the moment, Chair. The acting executive for academic relations and for marketing and communications. And those 2 positions will be filled shortly. In fact, they've been advertised. The performance management is a strong focus. Core discipline career management policies were approved, and systems are being implemented at the moment. So we're giving a lot of attention to this area. Employee relations, it generally is a very stable environment. We have very good working relationships with labor, and so that hasn't been an issue. Our personnel cost shares increased by 22%. In fact, there should be a 2 there, from 1.1 billion to 1.3 billion. So notwithstanding the earlier points that I've made, we have appointed significant numbers over the previous financial year. And you can see we're spending a lot more now at the moment. And a lot of that was attributable to during the period under review to 11.25% increase in salaries across the board. Just to talk a little bit about information technology, Chair, at the last meeting we reported on the tracker lab that is being implemented in KZN. Because when we took over KZN, the IT systems were at best very basic. So we started off with quite a sophisticated information lab system that's being implemented to deal with the issues around billing, to deal with the issues around making results available quicker to our customers, to deal with the issue around quality assurance, to deal with issues around managing costs, etc., and providing and having a central repository for all data. So the implementation started in KZN. I should inform you, Chair, that we didn't meet the targets with respect to the lab track information for this current finance, for the year under review. And it was largely because the project had started much later than we had originally anticipated. So we are running late for the year under review, but we in fact have made up for time, and we will meet the 1st of April deadline with respect to going live for KZN in 2010. So we're not too concerned about that. So phase one, as we said, is KZN. Currently, during the period under review, 9 of the 53 labs had gone live. We got another 44, but we'd be done by March 2010. And phase two check is to roll out the program to the entire country. At the moment, we're sitting in a really difficult situation where the systems are quite archaic. And if we want to make a change, we have to physically go to every lab and make that change. Whereas the lab track will allow us to do that at a central point, then everything will change throughout the entire system. So it's quite complicated. And it also makes it quite complicated for data management, etc. So we're going to go ahead, hopefully, based on our performance, we can go ahead with the rollout in 2010, 2011. And by 2012, 2013, we will have completed the entire country and have quite a modern IT system from the point of view of addressing the issues that I've just flagged. So the benefits are basically enhanced delivery of lab results, because we can then use this system to get back results to the institution. Obviously, once we've sorted out the interfaces between our systems and the hospital system, and it'll all be web-enabled, then just around automation, lab automation using also these systems will give us enhanced efficiencies, will improve turnaround times, reduction in transcription errors, because a lot of it now depends on people taking a request form and entering it into the system. And the potential for errors are quite huge with respect to that. And then, of course, the whole issue around automated billing, which will mean that provinces will get the bills on time. We can also look at our private work that we're doing. We can get bills, et cetera, directly to medical aid and get paid much quicker than we currently are. And this kind of, again, lists the electronic results system, because we've invested, notwithstanding the LIS issue, we've invested time and energy with the provincial health departments. And at this point in time, Western Cape, in fact, we're making the most amount of progress and looked at interfaces between our systems and the Western Cape system. And it's made significant differences with respect to the managing costs, with respect to getting results much quicker, etc. So those investments are paying off, and I'm hoping that other provinces will also look at the Western Cape experience and see the benefits of rolling it out in their own provinces. Okay, Chair, at the last presentation, we talked about SMS and the use of SMS technology. Remember, we talked about this SMS printer that we had invented and developed within NHLS, and that's resulted in improved turnaround times for results for TB microscopy results. And we're using cell phones and the SMS printers. So where there are difficulties with cell phones, we're then using the SMS printers, and I'll show you a slide now about the benefits. That's improved turnaround times, and we've seen significant growth in usage since July 2007. And at the moment, as we said at the moment, 667,000 TB results are we sending using SMS technology. And there's a sense, this kind of slide gives you a sense of how it improved from July 2007. Currently, large numbers of TB microscopy results are delivered by SMS technology. And management information, I'm not going to touch on this because I think it's sort of covered. I want to get Chair on the financial, because I'm sure that's the area that the committee will obviously be quite concerned about. Just in terms of the positive, Chair, for three consecutive years we've had unqualified audit opinions. We've invested 6.7% of our turnover, certainly by public sector standards in general. That's quite a significant amount of money on capital infrastructure with respect to improving our labs, improving our technology to respond to the issues of staff shortages and to respond to the turnaround challenges that we have from a customer perspective. Negatives, Chair, that although matters of emphasis are not an area of serious concern, but we should flag that the auditors identified three matters of emphasis. In fact, if we didn't have these three matters of emphasis, then we would have had an absolutely clean report. The difficulty is, the one is that with respect to title deeds, and it's unfortunately slightly outside our control, because this is when the Act was promulgated, all of the assets transferred to NHLS, but they're still sitting in the provincial department, particularly on the public works departments of the various provinces. And it's been quite a challenge to get the public works departments to get those transfers done. So it's slightly outside our control, but we're hoping in this financial year we'll get them all sorted out. The second area is around the completeness of grants income. Now, the way we report with grants income here at the moment is basically any funding that we get, we report on that funding. The auditors felt that we should be reporting from the point of the grant proposal going out. So we're going to tighten that up. Every time a proposal goes out within NHLS, and that includes NICD, NIOH, and NPR, we will now monitor everything that's going on, from a proposal that goes out right to the point that it's approved and funding comes through. So that's the point around the completeness of grants. It's really just saying that they want us to extend the controls. But the controls that we have in place for funding that we receive are quite strong. There's no concern with respect to that. Then there was a question around the board not fully constituted. There have been some issues raised around the constitution of the board, around membership, around the conflict of interest of provinces serving on the board. And so there's a discussion now. Dr. Pillay has commissioned some work around reviewing the legislation. So the auditors have flagged that, and that will report at the next meeting. The issue here, Chair, is the negative is that we've had a cash flow problem. And if you recall, when we saw you early in the year, we were owed R1 billion at that point in time. So that understandably explained the cash flow difficulties. So, Chair, I'm coming to the end. Chair, this table really talks to the financial year end. That's the table there. We put in comparative figures so you get a sense of what's going on. Just in terms of volumes, Chair, excluding KZN in 2004, well, that may be a bad example, but if we went here, we were sitting with 65 million tests that were done in 06, 07. We're currently, for the year under review, 80 million. And for the next financial year, this figure will go up even more in terms of demand. So it just makes the point about how demand is increasing. So there's a volume growth. We've seen, this figure here is high because of KZN. But on average, 8.4% there, 12.7% between 07, 08, and 08, 09. The turnover, Chair, there's the figures there. Again, quite significant improvement, but for the year under review, 2.7 billion rand turnover, NHLS. The net surplus was 189. But, Chair, you can already begin to see the consequences of the pricing issues, affordability issues, because for the first time, we've seen our surplus reduce from 245 million in 07-08 to 189 million here. And it's largely, this is explained largely from certain provisions that we had to make. And then some capital investments as well that we had to make there in this particular year. But we're seeing a downward trend. I'm hoping that this trend doesn't continue. The working capital, you can see, is negative. And the working capital is again related to the fact that cash flow has been a huge challenge for us during that particular financial year. And then capital expenditure, we already talked to that. We invested 178 million. And year on year, it's been an increasing amount. And I think that it's right that we make those investments, because our labs, particularly rural labs, are not of a standard that we should be expecting. And our equipment is also changing. I mean, the technology is changing so rapidly. We have to stay at the leading edge, because it's that part that's going to respond to the issues around improving turnaround time. But more importantly, Chair, the technology is becoming so intelligent that some of the challenges around our staffing could be addressed by bringing in the latest technology, because now we're finding that we use less and less people to do the same amount of work that we were doing previously. it still doesn't respond to the overall challenge, but it alleviates the crisis that we have at the moment. And then the net cash that was generated, again, we're going into our reserves now to finance some of our operations because of the difficulties around payment of our bills. This slide just really talks to the top one is the debtors' days. And you can see for the period under review, this is what it looked like, right? And our cash, on the other hand, is here. And again, you know, cash on hand is quite low, and is getting worse. The outstanding debt is here because we talked to this at the last presentation. We're providing 2 years figures there. We put in the 09 figures. And these are the 09 figures. This is the figure for the year under review. That while at that point our debtors' days were looking very bad, here we should say that as a result of the intervention of the Portfolio Committee following our last presentation and the intervention of the National Department through the Minister of Health, for this financial year we've seen quite significant improvement. You can see already the downward trend. It's not anything near what it should be. But the good news that is we're moving in the right direction. And Chair, I must record the appreciation of the Portfolio Committee, and particularly yourself and the National Minister for having intervened with respect to the provinces. The situation has improved quite significantly. And I want to make this point, that at that point we were owed R1 billion. I just checked the latest figures before we had come in. It's now sitting around 650 million. So although it's huge, it is moving in the right direction. And again, there's a debtors days, you can see it much more clearly here. It's improved, but again, we can't be sitting with 127 days, 128 days, 127 days. The board has set a target of, in fact, the board has set a target of 45 days for the executive. Then, Chair, if you look in your annual report, the auditors also look at the key performance indicators, because I guess that's the question that you're particularly interested in. And these are the key performance indicators that we have not achieved. If you look at the annual report, the detail is there with respect to what we've achieved. But I've flagged this, because I think it's appropriate that we let you know there are some areas we've not achieved. So we're looking at the financial perspective, and we're looking at the strategic value driver. For financial perspective, for ensuring financial sustainability in service, research, and health services education, the measurement there was achieve a surplus. You already know that we failed to achieve the target that we set for the year. The target was 10%. We achieved a surplus of 7% of revenue. So we underperformed there for the reasons that I've already cited. Cash cover, we had a target of 860 million rand. We only achieved 139. But again, it's directly attributable to the non-payment of bills. But Chair, I want to emphasize, the moment we'll be talking for the period under review, the situation looks different in the current financial year. For capital expenditure, we had budgeted, Chair, 9%. And it was because there were areas of automation, et cetera, that we wanted to do, because that had the potential for improving turnaround times and reducing our dependence on the skills that we have. Unfortunately, we had to put some of our capital projects on hold because of the cash flow difficulties, and we were only able to achieve a 6.7% against revenue. And it's mainly because we had difficulties around cash flow. So we reprioritized some of the capital programs. Our debtors day, Chair, at that point was 90 days. Obviously, again, I don't have to go into the details, 147 days for the period under review. If we're looking at turnaround time, Chair, this is an area that's of concern to us, and I'm sure it's of concern to the National Department. We have set a target in 08-09 of 36 hours for turnaround times for CD4. We achieved 41%. 41 hours, sorry. 41 hours. And it was largely, Chair, because we we had difficulty with equipment. We had quite a bit of contamination, et cetera, during that time. And so that contributed to it. And there were also difficulties around our logistics. The one area that we have to invest a lot of time in is strengthening our logistics, getting specimens from remote sites to central sites. Because remember, we don't have this area around TB and HIV is kind of is decentralized, but we don't have sites all over the country. I gave you in the first slide the number of sites that we have currently. So we got to invest more money on the logistics side, and we got to become more creative around strengthening the logistics part of what we are doing. So we are not able to achieve that target there. For turnaround times in viral loads, this has been particularly worrying because the target at that point was 84 hours and we're sitting at 196. But again, it's related to unstable platforms because we had put out that new tender at that time. And so I think the companies themselves had difficulty in terms of the technology that was provided. And if you look at the volume increase that we saw, a lot of the equipment that we put in place, in fact, couldn't respond to those volume demands. So that was the one side. The other side was just the stability of the platform, although that's improved significantly. And the company that we're working with at the moment, in fact, invested a lot of time and support with respect to sorting out the platform. And the third side was the issues around contamination, et cetera. So they fixed all of that. But Dr. Pillay, we were not able to achieve those targets. But we're looking a lot better now in the current financial year. Then around fostering relationships, I've already talked that 50% of our bilateral agreements were signed. We should have signed all of them. And I've told you that it just wasn't possible given the leadership issues as well with respect to NHS. Because remember, Chair, for the latter part of the financial year, for the last 6 months of the financial year, there was no CEO, there was no CFO, and the director, the HR and the academic relations executive was acting. Then around LIS implementation, I've already told you, Chair, that we ran behind because the project started much later than we had anticipated, but we've made up for that time. Operational efficiency, the top 10 risks, we said we'll see a 10% reduction in the top 10 risks. Unfortunately, we didn't achieve that. And it was partly because we should have appointed a risk manager in that financially. We hadn't done that. We've since appointed the risk manager. We already got plans in place to rapidly address the top 10 risks and plans to mitigate those risks. Ensuring a percentage of lab implementation automation. There were four sites that we were going to automate. But the automation process started a little late, partly because of the cash flow problem. And the second site is we now have two of the automation sites that we have in the country are the largest automation sites in the world. So I think we were also quite ambitious in terms of what we wanted to achieve. And when we got into the actual implementation, within NHLS and within the companies that were doing the automation, I think it was the first time that we realized how complex this is. So we were not able to achieve that, but at the moment, we were able to catch up. So in this financial year, we were able to catch up. Then with respect to the PT schemes, I've talked to that, so I'm not going to touch on that. The skills acquisition, Chair, we said that we will have the strategy and methodology document drafted. Again, the work had started, we were not able to complete that, but it was largely as a result of capacity problems within the department. But in this financial year, I can tell you that those documents are now complete. Then with respect to vacancy rates, we have budgeted positions. We've not been able to fill all of those positions yet. Again, because if you're looking at medical technologists, pathologists, etc., we have the money, we just can't attract them. Individuals are just not there. And if we're looking at technologies that are available, we have the post, but the number of people that are coming out of the universities of technology are just not enough in terms of responding to the need. So we've not been able to achieve our targets there. then maybe just to focus on a couple other things, the customer satisfaction survey, we should have completed the entire survey in that financial year. Again, because of capacity issues, we are only able to do the pilot, but we've since completed the satisfaction survey and we'll report it that when we get the next opportunity. We're happy to share with the portfolio committee the current report today if you think that that would be of use to the committee. So we're not able to do that. And then just with respect to the achievement of our employment equity target, yes, we were not able to achieve our employment. We had set a target of 80% of numeric target that we should have achieved with respect to our employment equity plan, because we've got a five-year plan, and 50% of affirmative action target. But again, they're just with respect to that, the senior positions within the schools of pathology are still predominantly white. And I flagged this at the last meeting. The gap between people that are coming in to the profession and people that are occupying the leadership positions at the moment is quite wide. That's not unique to NHLS. I think that's for the entire public health system. So the middle layer chair is missing. And so I think that this is going to be a much bigger challenge for us to respond to. So while this remains a focus of the organization, it's not something that we're going to be able to do in the next 3 years. It's going to take us a lot longer. And as you know, Chair, that the lead time to train a pathologist is 11 years from their medical education training. So it's 6 years of at university, it's 2 years of internship, it's 1 year of community service, then you start your registrar training, it's 4 years of registrar training, and that's when you have your pathologist ready. Your technologists are 3 years at the moment, and there's now talk about, in fact, the first program for a four-year training, but the good news is that they will spend their fourth year in the services, so we'll have them in the fourth year in the services. But this area, Chair, I think that we are ambitious in setting those targets, and I think that there needs to be a broader discussion about how do we respond to that. And then the question around communication. We had flagged communication, and then I think that the perception issues from our customers largely relate to poor communication. And again, we were going to do an employee satisfaction survey. We just couldn't get around to doing that because, again, overwhelmed with other demands. But the employee satisfaction survey is going to be done and is underway in this financial year. So just to wrap up on these last two slides, and I'll be very quick. Just in terms of the next 5 years, we've started the strategic planning for the next 5 years. And we, in fact, just came out of a two-day workshop. And for the first time, we brought all our stakeholders in. So we've had all the provincial departments of health. We had the national departments of health. We've had other departments that we work with, DSP and other government departments. And we've had MRC and those partners as well. So the first day we looked at the five-year plan, we looked at what are our partners there and where we should be positioning NHLS. And there are a couple of things that came out of that meeting. And in fact, it's a discussion that Dr. Pillay from the National Department is now working with us on. So one was the issue around the absence of a lab policy and that there isn't a framework within which the pathology services, public or private, function. So that's been flagged. The second part is, and I've talked to this around a 10-year master plan for NHLS. Now, I'm using master plan. We'll find another name for it. But to develop a 10-year master plan with respect to what would NHLS look like over the next decade with respect to health technology policy, it's changing so rapidly. How do we now start planning to benefit from the technology and move away from a vendor-driven policy to an institution-driven policy or to a country-driven policy. The second side is around the infrastructure. If equipment is going to get smaller and smaller, and in fact now you can have the same equipment do 100 tests or 150 tests, what will our infrastructure look like going forward? Would we be putting bigger buildings or would we be putting in smaller buildings? Would we be setting up the services more centrally and fixing up the logistics than going more decentralized when we're sitting with these challenges around people? So even if we got the money Where are the people, the technologists and pathologists, to run labs in very remote sites? So however much there may be a need, and I think that the emphasis has to be moving more towards centralization, pooling expertise, but sorting out the logistics and still having our customers saying, I want the result in 24 hours, and we should be able to give them in 24 hours, but using other means to address some of these kind of medium-term problems. The last part is obviously the human resources part. What is our future needs over 10 years? And what is the training program and where do we put our money? Within pathology, there are certain priorities. So anatomical pathology remains a challenge. But the universities continue training in the way that they are training. So we may need to reprioritize some of our current funding and look at what are the future needs. So those are the three areas that we've flagged there. And there's some really good discussions happening with the National Department with respect to that. Then the question around the affordability question. And provinces saying that they can't currently afford NHLS. Now, I think that there's a combination of factors. The one issue is around whether or not the funding is adequate. But notwithstanding that, I think that the NHLS model has to be significantly reviewed. Because currently it's based on a model of NRCL minus versus understanding the cost and then applying a percentage with respect to a surplus. So there's the work that's just been commissioned between NHLS and the Department of Health to understand what is our current cost structure and then to develop a funding model based on that. The next issue talks about our research and teaching. And currently, we've got to generate the revenue to pay for research and teaching. Now, if there was a model that looked at some form of grant to NHLS, a conditional grant, then it eases the burden on the provinces. But again, I think we have to look at a mix of models and put some proposals on the table. Then the issue around a customer or a patient-centric approach, again, just flagging that it still remains a priority of NHLS. We are here basically to support the provinces, and we should be doing what they want. And going forward, we need to start talking to our customers on what exactly does that mean. The next issue around is about how do we use IT in all of this, and how does IT support our overall strategy. And we now want to look at end-to-end IT strategy. So currently, this whole issue around building the IT infrastructure, the IT freeway, and we've made a lot of investments in providing state-of-the-art IT. But if the Department of Health is not making similar investments so that we can meet at some point, so we're sitting with this poor three-lane highway, freeway, and the Department of Health IT systems are basically a dirt road. And is it going to connect? So we now want to start, we probably will slow down some of our IT strategy and aligning it with the various departments of health so that we make our investments as well at the right time. But also offer the opportunity for the provinces to piggyback on our IT system. And then the last point, Chair, is talking about consolidated networks. And he talks to the question of, should NHLS be expanding or should we be looking at other partners? And there's some interesting discussions around partnering with private sector providers or NGO providers to close the gap. So if there's an NGO or there's a private provider in a remote site in the Eastern Cape, then maybe we should be looking at they working with them to deliver the mandate of NHLS. Now, I'm not saying that we should, but again, part of the review is trying to understand that side of it. Because every time we make an investment, we have to pass the cost on to somebody. And so if the investment is already made, maybe we can lever off what's been done. So, Chair, I'm going to pause there to thank you, Honourable Chair. Thank the Honourable Members for giving us this opportunity to present. And I'm sure you have lots of questions. So we'll pick up the rest of the discussion. Sorry, I took a little longer than I should have.
No, thanks, Sir. This is the last time that you're presenting for this year.
Yeah.
So you have to tell us. But we know you're not dealing with this particular year, but you're dealing with the year that is under review. So thank you very much. And in fact, I think the one thing that is very important is that the burden of diseases is actually increasing for obvious reasons. And obviously your workload is going to increase and that is going to need more money. So if one becomes innovative and try and find ways of making sure that you decrease the amount of money that is going to be needed in covering that, that would be, when you mentioned these things of IT and how do we partner, because one of the policies of government is public-private partnership, and if those things could be handled well. It's a pity we can't help you in your problem that you have had with that water. There are no doctors here, neither nurses, so
we
want
to... But I wouldn't go anywhere near
them. Remember, that is the presentation from NHLF. And I would want us to concentrate on the year under review, unless there are some suggestions that you want to make on other things, but I would want us to concentrate on that one. So that is... welcome, Umamute. So I welcome... My mother, welcome. My master, welcome. My follow, welcome. Mamu Kenya. All these that I'm mentioning are those who came late.
No, sir.
I was here when
you started.
Oh, okay. Oh, I'm sorry, so that I should notice.
It shouldn't be that if I may have recently come today, I was.
And
today I needed a prayer.
Okay. So we can go on.
Yeah, would you mind that the appropriate individuals I'll answer the questions that I can, and then divert some of the questions to the others?
Yeah, we take it the reason why you brought them.
Yeah.
It was basically, we didn't know that you were going to be choked, but now that you have been choked, we're going to put you on that. Yeah, I think there's a worry that it's the you are the opposition and the members are not. So Umamu Kenya and the member follow should sort of come this other side. But if it's not going to disturb the meeting, but we can have questions. Okay, may I
thank you,
Chair.
I would
thank you, Chair. Mostly, I just wonder to be saying how do the department work with the support link, its support link? How often do you meet in a joint meeting? Do you come together to plan strategically so that whatever is happening or is envisaged to happen is being planned together? I think you'll tell me if you do participate in the strategic plan, because I see the management of NHLS together with the management of health coming together, maybe on quarterly basis or whatever, just reviewing and planning. I would like to see that. I'm from an organization which says together, working together, we can do more. And I would like to know how involved is the National Health Laboratory Service involved in the awareness, the awareness of health, because we have just given us statistics to see an increase in certain diseases. Now, like you made mention of pap smear, whereby a lot of people who are having cancer of the cervix, you find that they haven't undergone any pap smear testing. Hence, I would like to know how involved, like we are in the 16 days of activism against, and among other things, I would like to see you giving, encouraging the department, among other things, to take pap smear from the women. How are you involved? We are going to the World AIDS Day. How involved are you? And another thing you have said, that the TB in the mining sector is higher than in the public sector. And you have even talked about in the area of HIV, where there is an increase on Kaposi sarcoma. Because this, yes, will enlighten me, but it should be used at the ground level, at primary health level, at the working level. Then another thing, there is this thing of presenter, chairperson, presenter, not numbering their slides, not numbering their page, all those things. I think it should, because it become easy to say, whereby you are saying promotion is predominantly among the blacks. I don't want to hear that. I want to hear that, unless you tell me that 86% is due to excellent performance, because we are not in that era of just promoting people because they are black. Something which is very much lacking, chairperson, in the report, and I've been trying to ask myself, is it relevant? And at the end of the day, I felt that it's very relevant. I could have liked to see the readiness of NHLS for the 2010, because they are going to be involved. Now, I know that the 2010 is coming, but I would like to know how ready is our laboratory service to receive the major population, or the major people who are coming here, because they will get ill, they will need some investigation, laboratory investigation. How ready is it? And the last but one point, I was just concerned when you say that you are slowing down with your IT because of the Department of Health, one which has reached a cul-de-sac. I don't, because we want to see progress in the IT. Now, just because there is a lack of progress in the department, I don't want to see you open. And that is why I'm saying, how do you come together and work together? And I was in my oversight. I was in Moses Kotane Hospital, Josephman Hospital, and the CEO there complained about underfunding. And among the people whom they haven't paid is yourself. And now this is to the department. It has been a culture that, and I think, like you have said, even the chairperson, the committee have done something, but it hasn't improved. Now, and I'm saying that if there are accruals, if there is late payment, and if there is interest because of late payment, the department is going to have qualified audit. And we, when we are sitting here, we are getting to a clean audit. How can, if the people are still under budgeted and they cannot pay, they get an unqualified audit? And that's what I have said, because at a certain when I'm thinking aloud, chairperson, I was asking myself, why can't the money go straight? Like they sit with the department, they budget together, and the lab funds be reinvested, because you find that, because it's from an equitable budget, and always they are not being paid. And this is forever going to give us qualified reports because of late payments, because of accruals. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think this, I'm going to give my share. I think this is very important about the 2010, because much as we are dealing with the previous year, but we're not going to meet you before the 2010, so we need to know how. And the interesting thing in that 2010 is that there's a lot of people that need to be checked for using drugs to enhance their well-being in the. Not only that, so are you ready for that? Not only that, that we're coming, it's the first time that the football is coming to Africa. And now some of us, we use our traditional medicine to enhance whatever. Are you ready to make sure that you'll be able to detect those traditional medicines that would have used to enhance? Okay, Mama, yes, I can remember.
Let's take five heads. I have only one clarification question. I just want to know what systems are in place for NHL to provide their services to private patients or in private practices, because I've never seen walking to a doctor where you need a pathological investigation or diagnosis, where you'll find the private service providers like MPAS and whatever there, but you'd never find NHL services, so that you can be able to choose and pay with your medical aid or with your funds, so that this money can also increase the revenues and funds within NHL, and if the services are given to private practices, which I've never ever seen, or if they are not, what systems are in place to expand the services of NHL? Because I think also one of the other reasons that your customer satisfaction is not so good is because you are seen to be only providing services in private hospitals and not in public hospitals and not in private hospitals. Because I would for one like to choose to have my diagnosis and blood investigations taken to NHL rather than these companies that you don't even know where they've been there in the system forever and ever, and they are part of the oppressors, you know, if you can say that. Thanks.
Thank you. We will just take Memore, Mike, and Dr. Kanadia. You will be the last one, and then we'll take it up from there. I'm so sorry, thank you. Okay, Memora. By the way, Jürgen, you'll help us with the IT answer, because it seems to be connecting with the department.
Okay, thank you, sir. My apology for coming late, and then congratulations with your unqualified report. Inverted commas. Okay. I also have a slight problem with your number of pages and slides. I think it's becoming a generic for all the people that we meet, that they don't number the pages, because even last week we had the same problem. So when you ask questions, you really have to. So I've numbered my pages, and I'm going to go through them page by page. On page one, the second slide, you say explore ways to reduce the cost of service provision to our customers. I mean, could you kindly give us some of those ways that you've explored, because this question I asked previously, you are cost drivers in hospitals, so we'd like to see what has happened since then. And then you go to page 456 on your graph there. From 2008-2009, we see a decrease growth graph, even on page 5 and the other graph on page 6. I'm not sure, is it a decrease due to less a decrease in volume in terms of requests or access or funds? I think I wasn't here then when you explained this. I would like to just understand exactly what? Okay, yeah. What Okay. And then on page 10, sustainable funding sources for surveillance programs which were initiated with grant funding. I mean, the funding that you were able to sustain, how much was it? And then, I mean, did it replace the grant totally, or is it in addition to whatever grant that you received, if you received some grants from Department of Health? And then page 15, the stats is old. Yes, it's good, it's part of information, where you talk about total number of cancers reported to NCR 1991 to 2000. But we'd like to actually know what is happening currently. You know, I mean, 2001, for me, is still, I mean, it's old. It's good for information. We might use it comparatively, but with the current information that we might have. Then page 17, pap smear history. That was done in Soweto. Why do you only have stats for Soweto? I don't understand. Or for Gauteng. What about the other provinces? Maybe you do have, but you just maybe opted to give us one. So the question is, do you have others? You don't have to give us the details. If so, then it's fine. Okay, page 21. Quality assurance. when was this pilot study done? Which year was it? There's no year indicated. I'm not sure. Or is it, should we assume it 2008-2009? Okay. 54% in overall is alarming, particularly integrity. 39, integrity goes a long way, honestly, and communication. Do you have a specific plan in place in case this is not only perception? And how are you going to ensure that this is not perception, it's the actual, how do I put it? It's the actual, it's a fact, thanks. And then page 22, lack of a national strategic 10-year HR plan to inform the pipeline, it's alarming. I mean, but is there anything in place in the meantime? When do you think you would have compiled your 10-year HR plan? And 10-year, do you think is a smart plan to have a 10-year, I don't know. That's my thinking. I would plan every 3 years like we do with the MTF and all this. 10 years, it sounds like far-fetched or something. Page 24. Or should I stop? I'm left with three pages. Page 24 being the first one. Conditions of employment under the 60% of termination. Do you have any retention strategy? Or do you have any plan, particularly with conditions of employment? Because, I mean, it's an internal thing, conditions of employment, am I right? So, I mean, what is it that is happening that makes people leave because of these conditions? What are these conditions? Just name a few, and if you've got any plan to address them, what plan is it? Would you need funds for that plan? How are you going to work around it? Page 27, electronic lab result delivery, then using cell phones and SMS printers. I'm not sure about the privacy, the right of privacy for patients. How do you work around that? Don't you have times where information, you know, falls on wrong hands or something? How do you work around that IT-wise? Then the last page, page 32. How do you deal with debtors? Do you have any specific plan as a department besides us or the chairperson of the committee helping you get something from the department in terms of the debt? From in total, the whole of South Africa. Do you have any specific plan as a company to deal with debtors? Because I'm worried that under operational efficiency, on your second slide, the second table, on the achieved column, I mean, you only achieved 67 lab automation, né? That was implemented. The rest you did not achieve. And I think it's not only, I mean, internal operations eventually will affect service delivery. Am I right? So I just want to know, how are you going to work around that? Do you have a specific plan, you know, to ensure that you get those funds or not funds, the money that you are owed? Because you need this money to be able to operate, you know what I mean? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mawad. Okay, Mike.
Thank you, Jay. I've got a lot more questions than Honorable Morey has. No, I'm joking. Most of my questions have been asked, but if I can just elaborate on a few. The first one is to do with the cancer register. I'm concerned, and it has been raised, that we don't have an up-to-date register. It's at least, 9 years old, going on to 10, I suppose. And you state that it was the fourth highest cause of death in the country, so one would expect that, given the importance or the high level of death due to cancer, one would expect the register to be updated quite regularly. You also mentioned you had problems with the current legislation in collecting data, particularly from the private sector, and you said that with the new legislation coming into effect, it should help you. But if you could just elaborate on that new legislation, because I'm not aware of it. And then if you look at page 88 of your report, for the National Cancer Registry, it says acting manager. So we have an act. Then on the next page for the MRC, NHLS, VITS Cancer Research Group, you have another acting manager. If you turn the page, you have an acting manager for quality assurance research, and then we also have an acting manager for human resources. So it seems to be there's quite a lot of acting going on, and we have raised with other entities within the department that there always seems to be a lot of acting managers. What is being done with these positions in particular to get them from acting to permanent? And I'm sure it is coincidental that all four of them happen to be female as well. So maybe there's some explaining to do to the ladies here. But apart from that, and the other thing, the exposure that leads to cancers. I mean, I understand tobacco is one of them, but HIV, I've never heard of the link between HIV and cancer before. And if someone could just elaborate on that and explain to us the link between HIV and cancer. That's all my questions, Jeff.
Maybe we can quickly dispose of the last question and say what happens is that your HIV lowers your immune system. And one of the cancers that have become common that are not there is this Kaposi sarcoma because of the lower immune system. And then it comes up because what clears your abnormal cells is your immune system. So if it's lowered, then you get predisposed to all sorts of cancer problems. I'm sorry, Mike, but they're going to answer.
I can see Chairperson, you like to use Mike as your refresher course.
No, I thought he was from Eastern Cape, so I thought he was my homeboy. But I've been surprised that he's from Gauteng.
Okay. I'll think that when you talk about surplus, you actually talk about profits in other companies.
Yeah.
Okay. Now you have a nice where you said ideologically where you said. But what I wanted to find out about that is how do you utilize this particular surplus in terms of investments and things like that. And the other issue is the issue which has been raised about your debtors in terms of the period you take about. Why don't you just treat them like you are a service provider, they owe you, and then they have got to pay you in terms of the contracts you sign. Because if you look at local government, they also complain about the same thing. It's government, the department really doesn't pay them, And I think they prioritize people who can take them to court than people who won't take them to court. So once you start having a normal relationship of a customer service provider, they also understand. I won't touch the issue of on page 13 in terms of filling of vacancies. I think Mike is telling me that. The other one is the issue of, people talk about, when under page 31, when you talk about rendering of quality laboratory services, what does that mean when you unpack it? For me to go to any of your sites and say, are you offering quality laboratory services? What should I look at to do that? And under page 31 also, the period of collection of specimens, is there a program to improve that particular period, particularly in the Transkei area? And whether you have put a program to ensure that all your laboratories are SANAS accredited. And I can see under your financial statement, your attendance is also flat, Deca Hofmeyer. I can see that.
Look, what are the reasons why these people who are appointed to become members of the board, or they are not appointed in terms of the trade unions and all those who are not coming to the party? Maybe you're not interesting enough. You must start fighting with your chairman, and then people will like to be on your board. There must be a reason why they are not interested in doing that. Even if you change the legislation, depending on how you want your members of the board to be, you have got to do that. In terms of the boundaries you offer, how do you interact with the national skills funds and the health sector to ensure that they invest more money in skills development, targeting NHLS itself? And the NCR disclosure in terms of page 88, how far are you actively pursuing this amendment to the legislation? And what is the stumbling block? Why is it not going to be through? Or is it in the pipeline, and when can it get through? And under page 91 and 93, you raise this issue of scientific travel grants, where the previously disadvantaged institutions or universities are still disadvantaged in utilizing the travel grants. Are there reasons why? Are they are not eager to get involved in that? And my last question is, on page 92, you said almost all those researchers are unfunded mandate. They become unfunded mandate because they are not budgeted for. so why are they not getting budgeted? Because you might have realized that you have got to do this thing. It's more or less like part of your program. That's the last question.
Okay, can I request? I'm trying to be democratic. Can I request that we go for tea, and then you try and prepare who's going to answer. Then we come back after tea and answer the question. We agree. Okay. Let me welcome the CMS, the Council for Medical Aid schemes. They are here. We welcome them. We can go to tea with you. We're inviting you for tea.
If they will be having an event on December 1st, the late department is not known. If you have an event about the banana, you will face the
Fine. Okay.
No, I think we don't have that. For example, we have to take some of the donations in the end. Before the last Friday, last week, and together from them, Now you can give us the answer. All the pillars are doctors.
So we meet with them quarterly. And in fact, Dr. Pillay was right that process. And already there's a strong alignment of the National Department's 10-point plan and our positioning to support that. The same is happening at a provincial level as well, Chair, that there's strong interaction now with respect to that. The issue around underfunding and the non-payment of bills, what can we do about that? Is there another funding model? Remember I covered that there's a piece of work now that's being jointly done between NHLS and the National Department of Health to understand, first, is there another model, or are there models that we can explore? And that that piece of work will inform a decision between the NHLS board and the Department of Health in terms of the future. But with respect to the non-payment of bills, Chair, there are a couple of things that we've done. We've introduced some incentives in this current financial year. So we've offered for the old debt, we've offered a once-off 10% discount to clear the debt. Now, that would have translated into several million rand for each province. And the second thing that we did was offer a 2% discount if you paid your bills within 21 days, and a 1% discount if you paid it within 30 days. I should say that notwithstanding those offers, not all provinces have taken up that offer. The second side is the punitive side, which is the question that was raised by one of the honorable members, or the suggestion that we will be starting to charge interest to the provinces if they don't take up the incentives that we put into place. But I'm hoping that the costing strategy will answer the broader question. And that answers the next question, which is ways to explore to reduce costs, because we've got to wait for that study to be completed, and by March next year, Jorgen, there should be a document for discussion. The volume discount, the slides that seem to suggest that there's a decrease in volume. They're not a decrease in volume. What we did is we put the 09, 010 figures next to that. So that's only for 6 months. And it's only to make the point that even in this year we'll see quite a significant increase. So it's not a decrease in volume. And then how do we deal with debtors and what our plans are? I covered part of it. But the reality is that we can't take the approach of, because the one option that's available to us is to shut a lab. But the nature of the service doesn't make it possible for us to do that. So at this point in time, you can't close the account because it's a meaningless activity. Because closing an account means we won't provide you services. And I think that has another set of problems. So at this point in time, because we've invested so much of time in this, we want to give the current interventions time to bed down. And then if there is no real progress, then, we'll again start raising it again, Chair, with yourself and the Minister of Health. But as I said, both the interventions have paid off. So I would appeal for maybe just a little more time with respect to the provinces. And there is a broader question about the funding and whether the funding is adequate. Because if people are budgeting, remember the provinces, Chair, are budgeting at 3 or 5% across-the-board increase. But if their NHLS growth is going up by 12%, then clearly there's a mismatch between the funds that are available and what we're charging them. So I think that begs to a bigger question. Then the question around the legislation around the board. Again, it's one of the items that have been identified as work that needs to be done. So we are engaging the department with respect to the legislation. And, some of the proposals are that the board may become more proactive in identifying individuals and making recommendations for the national minister to consider. But I think it's better to wait for that work to be complete before we can take that process on the legislation. Then... And within that, I think there was a question of why is this not sexy enough for people to want to get involved, participating on the board. We've kind of raised with the trade unions, we've raised with other government departments. I guess people are overwhelmed with other things and this is not their priority. So I think it comes back to how should the board be constituted? Should the board be constituted on a basis of constituency representatives, or should it be constituted on the basis of technical expertise? And I guess that work will inform that process. And then there was a question around the coverage and the turnaround times. Sipo, I don't know, do you want to answer that?
Okay.
Maybe.
the issue of coverage and turnaround time, in particular in Transkei, I just want to start by saying in Eastern Cape we've got in excess of 700 clinics. And as we understand how rural Eastern Cape is, the roads there are actually having a very challenging infrastructure in terms of accessibility, especially when it is raining and things like that. But having said that, the transport system that we have put in place, at least the clinic is visited twice a week, at least. And at the most, currently the clinics are visited four times a week. The intention is to make it a point that each clinic is visited once a day in those areas. And I think, as I have indicated, there was also an issue of workload, where you find that when you go to the clinic, you might not find anything. When you go to the clinic, you find one specimen and things like that. But with the interaction that we've been having with the program managers, in particular in TB, program managers in HIV and things like that, we have come to an understanding that, for instance, they are the ones also who suggest that we believe in this clinic at least come three times a week, come two times a week while we are working on the mechanisms and things like that. But all of them, they do understand that the whole intention is to come to five days. I think also what they are understanding, because our intention is to make the department to be aware of the cost involved, because the logistics, they are really, really very expensive. In that area in particular, in Northern Transkei, the areas like Bizana, Flagstaff and things like that, we don't spend less than about 250,000 a month only for clinic visits, even though we are still not visiting them on a daily basis. But the two times a week, up to four times a week, it is really, really costly. So those are the issues, because it is important for us, also for the department, to understand the challenges that we are facing. Coming to the issues of turnaround time.
I mean, this one, are you using a private company or are you using your own?
We are outsourcing. In particular, we are outsourcing in the Eastern Cape.
Can you be specific? What are you using?
There are a number of private companies. I may not be quite sure of the names currently, but there are a number of them.
No, the reason I'm asking is that there was one time where you were using taxis.
No, there was an area that they were using taxis. It was in particular state trade at that particular time, and we had to make a special meeting involving the Department of Health as well as the community there. Because what was happening was that each time we put a private courier, the taxis actually, they literally chased that person away and even coming too close to attack the person. And therefore, we involved the local community and things like that, with the understanding that let us source from the community, and that's how we managed to resolve that. So there are no taxes at all that have been used now.
There was just one other question before I hand over to Barry. The question around the private sector and why is the NHS investing any systems with respect to the private sector? Remember, we're reporting for the period 08-09, but we flagged this as a strategic issue, and I think that the NHLS can play quite a critical role. But again, I think that we should be doing it with private providers, because with respect to the discussions around NHI, the National Health Laboratory Service could become quite an important player from two points of view. One is around the benchmarking of pricing, but two, about looking at other sources of revenue, because one of the ways in which we can ease the burden on the provinces is to find other ways to cross-subsidize. But what we need is then sophisticated logistics and collection points, because the current system of putting in these, having our forms in the private health system is in fact partly contributing to the high cost of pathology services, because you know, if you go to a private practice, within a few minutes of your test being taken, there's some guy with a bike that takes your results out. Somebody's paying for all of that. And so we've got to look at a system that's much more rational and much more coordinated. So
So we don't want to just put our stuff in there, and we may make some money in the short term, but to pick up from multiple sites, it gets very complex. So we want to look at partners, and there are individuals that are looking at collection points, particularly in preparation for the NHI discussion. And around that, we will look at setting up systems. But within our labs, we see a lot of private patients. So within our labs, they're either walk-in or individuals that are on medical aid using the public health system. We've got the systems to manage that. But we don't have the systems outside. But it is an issue that we flagged. So I'm glad that that's been raised. So if I can ask Barry to take the next set of questions. Barry, you've made a note of them, but I think they made sense to me, so they may not make sense to you. But.
Thanks, Chair, and to honourable members, thanks for the input. There were a couple of issues. I'll start with the occupational health-related things. TB in the mining industry. Apart from the general governance issues and meetings that are held stakeholder-wise between the NHLS, EXCO, and the Department of Health, both at provincial and national level, there are also meetings held in terms of two reporting structures in the NHS Department of Health. So that's through the public entities grouping, which is under Dr. Nikki Padiachi and Dr. Yogan Pillay on the strategic programs, including TBSIV. So we've already highlighted the TB rates in the mining industry are currently between 1,700 per 100,000 miners to up to 3,000 per 100,000 miners. And Dr. Pillay will tell you about the latest figures now from their data that's coming through. But it's in the region of 3 to 4 times the community rate. It's a link between a dust disease called silicosis. So as we mine, we have this, and our silicosis rates are among the highest in the world. And if anybody had followed the press yesterday, there was a legal court challenge put in by the Legal Resources Center about the unacceptable silicosis rates in the mining industry. And in fact, they're going after one of the big mining companies. We have provided the data for both sides because we are, in inverted commas, neutral in this, but yesterday that was one of the legal challenges. Originally, I was in the Northern Cape and there were some issues around Prisca, for example, and a suing of a British multinational, and it's the same companies that are involved in this. So what I was getting at in terms of TB, silicosis, and then the third aspect is HIV. So essentially what we have is a triple epidemic taking place that's coalescing. Silicosis damaging the lungs. TB then coming on board, partly because you've got a damaged lung, and then tuberculosis. And if you've got lowered immunity, that's the third factor. So when you have this, and then the conditions in mining, unfortunately, since 94, we still have what we're calling the cofactors, single-sex hostels, dam conditions, et cetera, the kind of cofactors that go alongside TB and HIV and the multiple factors. So that is a problem. We've highlighted it. And in fact, you saw in the slide from Sergey Pillay, there was the issue chair about the fragmented delivery systems. Occupational health, unfortunately, there was a major policy commission in 94, but we've never come to the process in terms of coming together with a consolidated framework on occupational health in South Africa to look after 11.5 million formal sector employees and 5 million informal sector employees. It's Department of Mineral Resources that deals with mine health and safety issues, Department of Labor with non-mining activities, and Department of Health that picks up the pieces. So that's something that hopefully your portfolio committee will ultimately start pulling together, special either to yourselves or what we've asked of the Department of Health is to reach out and pull a meeting together as a convening summit. Because this has to deal with the past legacy, but we also have future generations of workers that are still being exposed and the problems, and that's a wider issue. So let me not get into the kind of policy governance, but saying that we've got the data, something has to be done about it because we can't keep on describing burden of disease. We have to intervene with your help on intervening to prevent further workers from having silicosis, TB, etc. There's wide issues. We've highlighted the burden of issues on silicosis, but there's lung cancers, there's mesothelioma, and there's many of you that come from provinces that have this fairly high burden. Unfortunately, mining accidents makes the press. People don't know about the slow death and the slow disease factors that comes in from asbestosis exposure, etc. And it's something that I think we need to highlight. But so I hope that answers then the TB. And we've asked, we've sent some data to Yogan Pillay because we don't have convening power. We can only give support and advice to yourselves. and to the Department of Health. Unfortunately, I think we have a meeting with the Chief Mining Inspector next Tuesday. So finally, we've got through to the Department of Mineral Resources with Segi Pillay has convened that meeting, and we will present some of this data to the Chief Mining Inspector from the Department of Mineral Resources, and we're also working quite closely with the Mine Health and Safety Council. There's right now a memorandum of understanding between us and the Mine Health and Safety Council. So we are doing this work, but we're not frontline in terms of it. It needs business, trade unions, and yourselves to come to the party, and I think we can work at how do we eliminate some of these exposure issues. No. I think that was... Chair?
Okay. No, continue. I thought we were finished.
No, it was the cancer registry. I think that was the only issue related to the occupational health, but... The cancer registry was a bit difficult. There are three institutes under the National Health Laboratory Service umbrella: National Institute for Communicable Diseases, National Cancer Registry, and National Institute for Occupational Health. I took up my job in January this year, and in February I was given to look after also the cancer registry. The cancer registry has not had a director since 2002. But fortunately there was a small team that kept the ship on the way and. There were some issues around data collection, which is highlighted in your documents. We agree with you that it is an unacceptable situation that we don't have data up to date. So we have a plan in place in terms of sorting out the organizational structure. But linked to the organizational structure is a very important issue, was the regulation. So the regulation, the status of the regulation is, Dr. Pillay might comment on that, we've inputted onto it about reporting. Some of the laboratories, particularly in the private sector, were hiding behind the fact that it's confidential data because we do need ID numbers and names because of duplicates. We had to, there's the whole issue around cleaning of the data. There's people present to different labs, and you could also have multiple diagnoses on one patient because they come to a primary health care center, they might come to a district hospital and subsequently come to a academic teaching hospital, and we need to be clear that we're not reporting on the one cancer three times because the patient presented at three parts of the system. So the private lab that actually said that they couldn't give us the data, partly because of the issue around confidentiality. Now the regulation will sort that out. Our reporting at the moment is internal to the NHLS in terms of the data we've given you. Now the one issue is related to the fact about national institutes being truly national. There was an historical perception that the national institutes were very much Joburg-based, and I'll come back to the data around Soweto in a minute. But very much Joburg-based and really covered Gauteng province and did not cover the whole of the country. So a strategic focus from the EXCO currently and the board is that the national institutes have to be truly national, and with the results that we are setting up in a strategic plan. Remember the results are given to you through Segi Pillay is based on tissue-based pathology. That is not reported on internationally because what the international agency that deals with cancer is called IARC, the International Cancer Registry, which is a WHO, World Health Organization, outfit based in Lyon in France, wants a population-based registry. And there's never been a population-based registry set up in South Africa. The Tekweni municipality and the Cape Town Metro, both metros, by the way, Tekweni Metro and Cape Town, are interested in setting up a population-based registry. And we have been in discussions with them for the last 3 months. The key area is about budgets and where do we fund that. Because we've never submitted a business plan on cancer, on the cancer registry to the National Department of Health, as opposed to the other two institutes having budgets from the National Department of Health that help us with the public surveillance function. So that's the discussion, firstly, is to, in the plan going forward, is to set up two population-based registries in the new financial year under discussions with the Department of Health and ourselves as the NHLS. And that ultimately would be the reporting in terms of populations at a local level that we can track over time. On the tissue-based registry, we are beefing up. We currently have a link between University of KwaZulu-Natal, University of Pretoria, University of Witwatersrand, and University of Stellenbosch as a start in terms of public health colleagues and colleagues working in cancer oncology that work with us in terms of the interpretation of the data. So we're looking at a national footprint in terms of support for this kind of activities, and that's going forward in terms of the reporting on it and updating the statistics and putting more resources in. We have the data, but it's not complete at the moment, so we're just a bit worried. And because KwaZulu-Natal came on late into the NHLS, we also have to collect KwaZulu-Natal's data. And remember, KwaZulu-Natal represents 25% of the country's population, and we cannot leave that out even in terms of the public sector reporting. So that's the background in terms of that. So we apologize, but it's definitely the new executive is committed, and hopefully in a year's time that we would have actually brought it up to a much more higher level of reporting as opposed to 2001 figures. So we apologize for that on behalf of past executives. On the issue, and truly the issue is around the issue around a national footprint, and therefore we've involved these four universities as a start in terms of the public health departments involving with us, as well as reporting back. Now, in terms of the reporting back, we are turning around to our regional executives that they would be reporting back both to national but through the regional executives to the provinces in terms of cancer trends. As pointed out earlier on, the Soweto study was essentially a study done at Johannesburg Sarah Makeka Hospital. So it's a major cancer cohort. We are hoping to link up those. There are 120 new patients a month that are diagnosed with cancer at the Joburg General Hospital, academic hospital. That is the study that we are reporting on, where we do a two-page questionnaire on every new patient diagnosed with cancer, and that's the figures we gave here, where we could actually get what caused the cancer, or did they have a pap smear, or what is their smoking history, what is their occupation, etc., to look at those exposure data. We are hoping to increase what we're calling sentinel-type reporting. So remember, in terms of the plans going forward, we have tissue-based reporting, which we've given you ideas on. We've got a sentinel site at Joburg General Hospital, Joburg Academic Hospital, and we have the population registries in play that are coming up in time. So between these three factors of increasing the sentinel site to possibly Durban and Cape Town to the other oncology units over time, that we'd actually have a greater footprint of the country. And then lastly, working with the Medical Research Council has got a rural population site in the Eastern Cape. We're going to look at the burden of disease on cancers in the Eastern, using the Eastern Cape as a rural site. So we're hoping then that over the next 3 to 5 years to begin to get to a much more accurate input on cancer trends in South Africa that's reported much more accurately, evidence-based, and inputted in terms of moving forward on the cancer registry. Then, Chair, the last bit was on HIV and cancers, which I'm glad to say that you still retain a fair amount of your science knowledge. There's a whole range of, it is true what the chairperson said, that our body's immunity is lowered with HIV. And remember, mainly we talk about TB. So we talk about infectious agents and how it overcomes our body's immune status, because the white cells that HIV is attacking is lowering our immunity. So likewise, whether it's a chemical agent or other infectious agents, we do know that there are infectious agents that also cause cancer. And the best example is HPV, human papilloma virus, and it's linked with cervical cancer. So by lowering our immunity, then other infectious agents or chemicals or other agents that cause cancers can increase the link. And that's the direct link. And Kaposi sarcoma is a skin-related cancer and was unheard of in black populations in general, African populations in particular, and that's been on the rise, and we showed you some of those figures. And there's also B-cell lymphoma. There's a whole range of blood cancers as well that have been on the rise, which are directly linked to HIV. Some of the journalists that are present here have asked for some of these inputs, and hopefully jointly we would provide some inputs on that from a scientific, if the committee is interested in cancer-linked, in HIV-linked cancers that we can provide to the committee and others. We just highlighted Kaposi, but there's also B-cell lymphomas. There's also squamous cell carcinoma now, which used to be it's a cancer of the skin. Was very prevalent in white populations because they don't have melanin, but it's now also coming up in the African populations, and we think it might be linked. So these are some of the research areas, but our job is to give you trends and then to highlight that with the Department of Health and then look at the policy interventions that we can make. I think that covered then the three areas. We apologize for the acting persons involved. It wasn't particularly related to whether they're female, but we couldn't just go in and just input. I think we need to look at the structure, the policy framework, the regulatory framework. Otherwise, you will then undo things. So it was a very structured approach, and that's what we are discussing right now with the Department of Health Chair in terms of taking forward the cancer registry.
I think before you go, while they're changing things, I'm sure I've forgotten what you said Barry is doing in HLM. But I think he's got, there's a lot that he's doing there. And it seems to be connecting with the policymakers. And I think it's very important, but I need to understand exactly what Barry is doing. not only for that part, but there, I think we need, as a committee, we need that information that we're giving us. You know, when you're talking about the TB, the HIV, AIDS, most of those people that are working in those mines have got relatives or wives that are somewhere else. And obviously that TB is going to be moving out, and we can never achieve our millennial people's goals if we don't attack it at that level. And this meeting on Tuesday with the mining or whatever, I'm not sure if some of the committee members should not be invited to the part of that meeting. So that is, and instead I was thinking, I'm not sure what you say in numbers. I was thinking as he's talking, that probably we need to find some day, probably next year, to go to those mines.
Yeah.
And have a look at what is actually going on. Because we can't keep on talking about silicosis. This is something that we're talking about when we're still young. We know the economy of South Africa partly is from those mines. But something needs to be done. And this is what one would call silent death, because nobody takes them. I mean, the TB to be so high there, but you always get the national statistics, but we don't specify that this is coming from this area. I think that's where our problems are. I think we really need to go into that. I'm not sure how we are working with MRC and the ASAF. This Academy of Science and Technology that is based in Pretoria, because obviously they don't have laboratories, they depend on you. I wonder what's the relationship, how are you working with them so that you can give them information, because I don't think they've got as much information as you have. But I was just commenting, okay.
As 2010 fever approaches, I'm hoping we're not going to have too much fever. But I think we're in good state in the sense that just this past 2 days, under the auspices of the National Department of Health, there's been a two-day workshop around 2010 and health issues, and specifically around communicable diseases. And so that's drawn a whole range of partners, Department of Health, WHO, CDCs, the HBA from the UK, the National Health Laboratory Services, were all represented here, and to assess what the likelihood is of, in terms of communicable disease, what the issues would be. So again, there's been lots of data to look at what's happened at mass events throughout the world. Communicable diseases certainly play a role, but not a significant role as far as we can understand it, but we need to be ready. So in other words, one could look at what could be imported, what's endemic, and what can be exported. And so each area has been assessed, and there were various experts presenting what the likelihood of, for example, let's take polio, for example. We know that pandemic flu is likely to happen. We have a measles outbreak currently. So these are the sort of areas that have been analyzed and reviewed, and it's important, therefore, to be prepared, for example, with the NHLS and the private sector as well. I think it's been a good example of pandemic flu, for example, in terms of preparedness, that the NHLS put in a network of laboratories, for example, to be able to be ready to provide the necessary services around that. So there's very good documentation as to what the likely problems are. There's good documentation around what and how to approach these risks. And I think the next step for us, as in terms of various stakeholders, is to work very closely together with the NHLS, with the provincial departments of health and other stakeholders to ensure that the plans and the readiness is there by 2010. I hope that gives you some assurance.
Thanks.
Thank
you.
Thank you very much. The first question.
Sorry, my apologies. Thank you, and thank you for the opportunity to answer and clarify. The issue related to surveillance funding and grant funding for the surveillance programs of the NHLS, I'm going to answer on behalf of Adrian, who sat down. The surveillance is a service provision to the department. It's in essence not research. It's service delivery that's required in order to give information to the department for decision making around policy and practice changes. And up until now, it has been funded by a conditional grant that has, over the space of about 5 years, probably risen on significantly below CPIX. And understanding that healthcare inflation is usually generally well ahead of CPIX. So in terms of the overall funding required for the surveillance program, and understanding that with the significant epidemics and other aspects related to surveillance that is required for the country, so in other words, the service delivery is significantly increased, but the funding is significantly lagged behind. So NHLS has cross-subsidized, and to the extent that NHLS is now somewhere between 65 and 70% funding the surveillance function of the National Institute of Communicable Disease for the National Department. So certainly from an NHLS perspective, we have considered going forward that we would look at putting that into a formal business case and really engaging with the Department of Health on that particular funding issue. But so just to relate to that, it's been on a conditional grant for surveillance, but it has not kept up with the requirements, and the NHLS started off with minimal cross-subsidization, and it's now up to 65-70% of cross-subsidization. And that information is available should you require that. In terms of some of the quality-related issues, and perhaps I'll deal with the other research-related question around the unfunded mandate from the Honourable Member. In essence, with the three mandates of the NHLS, the service delivery mandate, the academic teaching mandate, and the research mandate, the academic teaching mandate, because of its inextricable link to service delivery, has been cross-subsidized through the fee-for-service income generation that is generated through service delivery. If we were to cross-subsidize research through fee-for-service, it would significantly add to the burden of costs to the provinces. We just had a whole discussion today around affordable services to provinces and how that happens. Obviously, in terms of service delivery, looking at options of conditional grants for service delivery rather than billing fee-for-service might well be an option. But I think that's already been covered today in terms of re-examining cost bases and funding models, and that is already under discussion with the Department of Health. I'm just explaining the history around why research has therefore become an unfunded mandate, in that it in fact is funded through grants. So you'll see in the graphs and in the information provided that it is grant required, which means that when a grant expires, that funding for that particular research, and particularly for skilled researchers, ends. And so our ability to retain and sustain research on a long-term basis is challenging when we are contingent and reliant on grant funding. It hasn't been a particular problem up until now, but with the economic climate, and significant, it's been much more difficult to get grant funding, and grants have been removed midway through research projects, which we haven't experienced in the past. So it is a significant issue for us right now, and we're certainly looking at potentially not cross-subsidizing, because it does mean that the service delivery gets more expensive, but certainly to look at other ways of getting of retaining long-term research grant funding. In terms of the travel grants, which is an academic teaching and a bit of research-related issues, the Honourable Member noticed that we had commented that this was the first time that we had analysed our support to our academic staff to attend scientific congresses and travels, and also to present, obviously to take South African-generated research and populate it around the world and really share some of the valuable insights that we've gained. So it's a really important component that has never been analysed before in the NHLS, and this is the first time that we've analysed it. In part, the reason that previously historically disadvantaged universities reflect a lower utilisation of that fund is in part because of some internal administrative issues within the NHLS, and that they utilise skills development funding for it. So it was just that it hasn't been able to be aggregated in that format. Now that we've fixed the administrative utilization of that fund, that's already starting to show some changes. But we are very concerned about some particular universities, such as Walter Sisulu in Mthatha, where our academic department is extremely weak. It also is demonstrable of the fact that we find it very difficult to recruit the good academics into historically disadvantaged universities. So once we start getting a good cohort of staff there, the research will automatically start to flow from out of that. So it's all linked to teaching and staffing and skills related issues. In terms of the quality assurance questions, what does the quality lab service mean? There are four aspects of quality service delivery in the NHLS. The first is technical quality. Does the laboratory results that you get, can you trust it? Is it a valid result? So when it emerges from the analyzer Is it a valid result? When it comes off the microscope, is it a valid result? And the honourable members can be really reassured. We have proficiency testing schemes, which are the technical quality measure. In other words, we send material that we know what results must emerge into the analysers and then see whether it generates the results that we are expecting. And we have a 95% compliance for proficiency testing. With biological samples, that is absolutely tip-top for 95% compliance. We also provide, we're an international EQA provider in that we actually provide for most of Africa as well. So of our 2,600-odd participants, we have 300 participants in the country under NHLS. We also provide those EQA schemes to the private sector. So AMPAS, PathCare, Lancet, etc. are also getting their EQA, their quality assurance, their technical quality assurance from the NHLS. So please be reassured from a technical quality point of view, in fact, we compare extremely favorably internationally. World Health Organization utilizes us throughout Africa, and so that's the one aspect. The second aspect is about management quality. Are our systems and processes, management systems in place, are they good? That has only been implemented over the past 2 years ago, it was implemented for the first time, is a management audit, a quality management audit, and that every single lab is audited annually, and we've seen a 10% improvement in those audited figures over the past year. So that is aspects of infrastructure, it's aspects of management, it's aspects of systems, and other issues, including accreditation. The third component is benchmarking, which is where accreditation fits in. And I'll just deal with the question around accreditation now. Why aren't all laboratories accredited? Well, first of all, it's an extremely laborious and costly process. It takes approximately 18 months to 2 years to accredit a single lab. We have 260 to 300 laboratories, depending on how you classify them. If we were to accredit all of them at 30,000 Rand a year per laboratory, which is what SANAS charges, it would cost the NHLS 9 million Rand a year just to retain accreditation. So in essence, a one-man and two-man or two-person laboratory sitting out in different areas, it probably is not feasible and not required for us to perform the complex accreditation. And so what we're looking at is to ensure that certainly all our reference labs are accredited, which are international reference labs. Our academic labs are all accredited, and currently we have 59% of our academic labs accredited. And the rest are pretty much in progress within the next 2 years, should all be accredited. And 29% of our regional labs are accredited. We don't believe that it is in the country's best interest to get all of our peripheral labs accredited. What we are looking at is an internal accreditation system, given that we have a number of resources. In fact, SANAS users, two-thirds of their assessors are NHLS employees. Let me repeat that. Two-thirds of SANAS assessors are NHLS employees. Therefore, there is no reason, and remember that all of our private providers and African providers are utilizing us for technical quality as well. There is no reason why we cannot set up our own internal accreditation scheme and maintain accreditation when we have those resources internally. So from an accreditation point of view, that's our third aspect. The fourth aspect, which deals with the customer satisfaction surveys, is that we have up until now not measured any customer perceptions. And it was with my entry and the CEO's entry to the organization, it was one of the initiatives that we instituted. For the year under review, which was really only 3 months, because it was the tail end of the last quarter, we instituted, compiled a pilot program, and not only compiled the tool, but also completed the entire pilot program, analyzed the results, and were presented them. The reason for the pilot program was the tool valid? Was it worth pursuing? And the results were good, it was a valid tool. We then in April and May, conducted the baseline survey. We surveyed 3,000 participants, 3,000 respondents countrywide. As I said, we have 300 laboratories. Every single hospital and every single hospital in the country was surveyed, and 10% of clinics. We obviously are going to look at increasing the number of clinics, but when we physically take one of our auditors out to a clinic, and there are between 4,500 and 5,000 primary healthcare clinics in the country. It's a rather onerous task for 8 people to visit, so we visited 200 of them, so that was not too bad. And that baseline survey has been completed. The results are available and have been given back to our stakeholders. Most importantly is that we fed those results back to our stakeholders, And not only have we started to put plans in place to improve the areas in which we are weak, but also have put an improvement target on every single manager scorecard in the organization. Every single manager, not just service delivery managers, but also support services managers. We're also running internal customer satisfaction surveys. And that covers the questions that we're following.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, just add 2 points. So one is that there just was a recent WHO TV review. And that report, Dr. Pele is aware of, was fairly positive about NHLS and the lab support that provided through NHLS for TB. The second point, I just wanted to highlight the point. Karen raised the issue around the grant funding and the research activities. The reason that we're flagging this is that it's an area of quite serious concern, because at the one level, all of the researchers who are often PhD level researchers, once the grant comes to an end, we have to let them go because we just don't have the money to sustain them. And that contravenes other policies of government, because researchers are important, and we're also encouraging PhDs. So we've got to find a way, and in fact the discussion we're having within NHLS is to find a way in which we can hire the researchers as part of the overall team and use the grant funding to support the research activities, and so that we don't lose the individuals and the expertise that we build and invest over a period of time. And then suddenly we find ourselves in a situation where we have to let those individuals go. But that's something that the portfolio committee may want to pick up as well with other, with education and other departments as well. But in this year alone, we had to let 4 PhD level researchers go because we just didn't have the funding to sustain those programs. Can I ask Paul, if you can just cover the HR? Then I think we should be done.
Yeah, just tell me about the instance. But
there was an issue raised around of honorable members. There's an issue raised around the promotion of people that it should just not be left. Indeed, based on observed performance. The NHLS instituted a performance management system, performance management tools, policy in place that guides the progression of people or assessment of performance. A number of those would be individuals who are considered into positions called, say, lab supervisor, cum lab manager category. So it is performance based. On the issue of a 10-year plan, taking into account the lead time to prepare a pathologist, or even to get a technologist to reach maturity, we found it necessary to get into a process of developing a 10-year plan rather than 3 years. Notwithstanding that, yes, we will look at shorter periods in order to monitor our achievement of the 10-year plan. Do we have a retention strategy and conditions of employment? Starting with conditions of employment, we do get relatively concerning turnover from the rural areas. People don't want to go to the rural areas. On the other hand, still, we don't have even the numbers to deploy to the rural areas. Therefore, working hours are long and the cost strain. Soon we get those resignations. So it is a challenge that we are faced with, and as part of the retention, reward remuneration retention strategy, one of the things we are looking at is maybe immediately we should look at means of rewarding those who are in the rural areas to try and keep them. We are in the process of looking at a comprehensive reward retention strategy. There are mechanisms in place right now. We've got a very elaborate and detailed system, particularly for the core discipline, which takes into account career development, which recognizes performance of people at any one point and then moves them to the requisite level where they should be given that level of performance. And yes, we are looking at not only the core disciplines, other disciplines as well, to be able to keep the talent that we have. But I think more importantly, we need to indicate that where we have sponsored technologists, scientists, as well as pathologists for development. We have sort of a web back payback process. It's a contractual process. We are able to lock in scientists and technologists for a period, 18 months, pathologists at least 3 years. So we find that it helps us to retain someone.
What's the other one?
We covered.
Chair, just to add to the point, the retention part of this, remember there's a tension. We don't want to go the classic route of throwing money to the problem, because if we're saying the salaries are inadequate, then if we can improve salaries. But then we've got this tension between the affordability from the province point of view. So we've got to find other ways, and the kinds of discussions that are happening now is about a values-driven approach. So individuals who choose National Health Laboratory Service, like the public sector, choose this for reasons that go beyond money. Obviously, we have to deal with offering reasonable salaries. But we caught up in this bind now, where we got to look at ways in which we can bring down costs. And already you see almost 2 billion is goes towards the salaries of our staff. So, you know, we kind of conscious of that. But notwithstanding that, we put in a couple other things, like for rural areas, et cetera. Now we looked at providing accommodation. So, you know, because accommodation is a problem. So we put in mobile homes, the nice three-bedroom air-conditioned units. And in that way, it tried to attract people. So even if they came in for short periods of time, they don't have to worry about things like transport and accommodation and that sort of thing. But we also want to review our reimbursement system to ensure that there's some form, I mean, I don't want to call it a rural allowance, but there's some form of incentive for the individuals while they spend time out in peri-urban or in rural areas. So there is a structured program. But it is limited with respect to the whole question of developing the affordability framework for initiatives. Then just the last two questions here, we'll very quickly, if I can ask Celia to do another.
I think you didn't miss the two questions that they asked about slow lending. That we have submitted a workplace school stand, and yes, it was approved. We really are vigorously guiding our training initiatives, development initiatives according to the plan. And we are comfortable that in the coming year we'll be able to submit an annual training report, and we will be able to claim as well against our skills levy. And I think in terms of the positions that where they can, according to the report, those positions have all been filled in. The HR executive has been filled in. There are two positions, like the CEO indicated, that we are advanced in the process of recruitment, which would be the one position currently held by our acting executive manager for academic affairs, research, and QA, as well as the communications and marketing held by the leading officer. But those ones reported have all been filled in. So I think those are the two that we can understand.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. The one question was around what are we doing to bridge the gap between our IT systems and the province's IT systems. And I think we've done quite a lot of work in that. At the end of the 2007-08 financial year, we had made our IT systems available for the provision of web access to lab results to the provinces. Unfortunately, the Western Cape is the only one that has taken up that challenge and has gone ahead. It does require commitment from the province, and what we're doing there is working with the province, with CETA, to enable that connectivity to provide the access to our lab results, because that's the one area that does close the gap in getting turnaround times improved, because the results are available almost immediately. We're also, SAGI is committed to providing some infrastructure in the KZN implementation. We are going to supply some PCs to the province to make provision of lab results to the province. We've got another project on the go where we're looking to provide another 600 odd PCs to the Eastern Cape as well as the Free State, where those are little laptops that are 3G enabled, So we're not reliant on the CETA infrastructure or any other infrastructure, and we're hoping that that will facilitate the access to lab results. We're doing some development around an application that runs on the cell phone so that each individual will be able to access results via cell phone technology, not just the TB microscopy, but the entire lab report. And we think that that technology is going to improve some of that, and there are 400 BlackBerries that we are about to provide to clinicians for that. We've also made available our corporate data warehouse data to the provincial coordinators that we work very closely with around data that they require to monitor and evaluate their systems as well as the financials. The issue around patient confidentiality around SMSs came up. Generally, those SMS printers that we developed are in secure areas, so they should be under lock and key. The other aspect is that we are reliant on the cell phone number being provided to our system so that we can provide the result back, and I think that ensures a certain amount of confidentiality. We also haven't really extended it to HIV testing largely, specifically because we've concentrated on the TB microscopy, which is a notifiable disease anyway.
I think that covers the questions. I hope it has.
Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, CEO. Members, we don't have the luxury of time. But there were some people who wanted to ask questions, and probably there might be follow-up questions. But if we could make it short, if there are none, then we would consider going on to the next presentation by CMS, Council for Medical Aid Schemes. But it's up to you. I'm waiting for you members to
give me some direction. Cover. Oh, there's only one last one from Grace. Okay.
No, I am covered, or partly covered, but there's this thing that maybe I don't understand. When the report was presented, that technology. the report is so brilliant, so nice. But to me, as an individual, it looks like the report is mixed with the future suggestions, which, if it was me, I'll say this is the report, and maybe at the end come up with suggestions for the coming year. Also, the question that was asked about buzzers, I just wanted to check as to roughly how many people do you give bursaries and from which countries? Like, I hear you are like national and international, and also in the position of acting, according to this company, how long do people act in this position? Do you have a guiding document that says you can act for 3 months or for a year, or it depends? And the late opening of the lab. There's somewhere where they say there were 53 labs which were supposed to be opened and only 9 were opened. But now we are told that the 44 that are remaining will be opened in March. What were the reasons of not being able to do justice with the 53, and what's going to happen, or what is it that you have in place that is going to make you open this 44 during this short time of space? So I think some of the questions, my colleagues have covered them.
Thanks, my question. The last one, CEO, those are some of the questions. There's one thing that is making some of us a little bit unhappy. In your presentation, which probably said into this, there's a lot of things that you have not achieved. And you are the ones who set up the standard. Can you reassure us whether that is caused by the fact that you have been overzealous in doing it, or you didn't achieve them because of whatever reason? Can you reassure us that
when you set it up next year for the oncoming year, you'll make sure that those are children, because that's how we're going to be assessing you, and that's what we're going to make sure that at least the job is done, not looking at the quality and the other things. There's this thing that always gets done, the rapid test on HIV. They usually counsel people and they do a rapid test. I take it that it's not done by you. But when I'm found to be HIV positive, then obviously they've got to confirm it with them. What is your connection between them? If you could answer those with what took place, then we can go on to the next.
Let me just answer. I'll ask Professor Kieran to answer the confirmatory test. Just with respect to the bursaries, Chair, the bursaries are for South Africans only, so we don't offer it to anyone outside of the African continent. We reported that there were 165 bursaries that we had offered in the financial year. It was one of those slides. And there are very strict policies about that, because it's also tied into a work-back payback. So it does lock people to the organization if we give them a bursary. Now, with respect to the acting positions, there is a policy with respect to the acting position. People can, they'll only be paid from month four, is it, for acting, from month four, or is it month two? And remember, for the period under review, there was no CEO, there was no CFO, there were all kinds of vacuums. Most of the acting positions now, in fact, complete are filled. There's only two that are open, and those two are open linked to the strategic direction of the institution, because we needed to get board approval about restructuring some of those positions, and we just got board approval now. So it wasn't that we didn't want to fill them. We didn't want to fill them and then find that we want to make changes to the organizational structure. So the acting position, and we're very conscious of the fact that we don't want people acting for long periods of time. And certainly going forward, Chair, we give a reassurance that we will be giving serious attention to. With respect to the opening of the labs, now I think that there may have been slight confusion that relates to the implementation of the IT in the KZN province. So we had agreed to do X number of labs, but because of the delay in awarding the tender, the program started a little later. So we ended up not reaching all of the labs that we had identified in that phase. But I did report that in terms of the future, we will meet the target, notwithstanding all of this. We'll meet the first April 2010 targets for KZN when spring life. And then, Adrian, if you can answer the question around the rapid test kits and where we feature.
Thanks, Jen. To comment, rapid tests do very well at a laboratory level. In other words, if you were to, and we've done this in terms of the support of the Department of Health, was to evaluate, for example, 53-odd rapid tests, and they performed very well at the laboratory level. So once you roll out those tests into non-laboratory settings, that the issues do arise. And there have been several publications now, including publications from South Africa, that shows that the sensitivity and the specificity of these tests actually are markedly reduced. They go down to 92%, 87%. There are multiple reasons why it reaches those particular levels. And we have been supporting the Department of Health in terms of developing the guidelines, because, again, quality assurance around these tests is critical. And so when you have a situation where, for whatever reasons, your sensitivity and specificities are markedly reduced, and you don't want people to enter the programs, whether these be preventative programs or care programs, with the wrong diagnosis. So in part, the additional testing is utilized in order to ensure that people are triaged in the appropriate way. My sense is that once these quality assurance guidelines and methods are introduced at all the sites, that we should reassess around the utility of using these confirmatory tests at the laboratory level. Because obviously there are funding issues or implications for both the National Health Laboratory Service and the Department of Health. So I'm hoping with the guidelines that will come through from the Department of Health that we can reassess this to ensure that the testing is done at a high quality level at these sites.
Thank you,
David.
Okay, with respect to your concern about the... very carefully your concern about the targets and how we set up targets. And let me reassure you that certainly for the current year, we've been much more circumspect about the process of setting targets. and ensuring that we identify aspects that in fact we can achieve. So if you look at the balanced scorecard for this year, we put in two sections, because at the same time you don't want to set the targets too low. So we allowed for a target and what we refer to as a stretch target. So at least there's pressure on executives to ensure that they're always performing over and above the minimum expected. But Chair, we note the concerns of the committee.
Thank you very much. I'm hoping that we'll get those statistics from Uberi. We are very interested. I don't know when can we get them. We are very interested. When are we going to get them, Uberi?
Chief, I guess through the NHLS, we've got your things. I can turn around that within the week. The only issue is that it's data up to 2001, because we haven't cleaned the other data sets. So that's why we really want to give particularly the ministry and yourselves as governance structures to give you all accurate data, because you know you will be interpreting that. So I'll give you the HIV linked cancer related data set up to 2001.
Okay. Thank you very much, NHLS. You can go now, but you are invited for a finger lunch if you want to. I'm told that you've got a meeting at 1 o'clock, your own meeting, but you are invited for our finger lunch. Enjoy your Christmas. Until we meet next year, revised at least, and be feeling stronger to work harder than this year. We understand that you have worked hard, but we think that you need to work even harder next year. Okay, thank you very much. We'll allow you to move, but we can call CMS to come.
Chair, from our side, thank you very much. We appreciate the opportunity. But still, there's the opening invitation for the committee to visit the site. It's very hard to communicate the kinds of things that are happening within
you. You are not closing for December, by the way, because we're always busy. Yeah. So we're going to come when we're coming to Cape Town for holiday.
Thanks to all for it.
Thank you. Sorry, we didn't have Christmas presents. We don't have enough presents.
Thank
I'm not going to be able to do it.
Nice to meet you again.
Okay.
I was the first DDG in Northern Cape.
Yeah.
So we were there
We don't want you here.
Very good key.
Members, I've been looking at the time. It's quarter to, it's 20 to 1. I see CMS has got a presentation to make. I'm not sure. It's up to you, but let's make a decision. Do we go on now and then ask questions after lunch, or do we go on for lunch now and then come back and make them present, and then we ask questions? One of the problems why I'm asking this question is because we've got a finger that can... Dada Khanal, can you close that off? There's some people are making noise. The problem is that we've got a finger lunch. Now, those finger lunches can become hard if they're kept for a long time outside. I don't know, but it's up to you members to decide.
Honorable Kate, it all depends on how long will be the presentation be. I don't believe it's an hour. If it's an hour, we won't be able to make it. Right. We've got only 25 minutes left.
Okay. Maybe, if we agree, let's ask the presenter, how long will it take, probably?
Well, I can make it as short as you want.
So less than 20 minutes.
For this, we'll try, but I can skip some. I'll let you have the first.
Okay. My
now I think we eat maybe for just 20 minutes and then start and continue. Because if we can say they are going to skip some information, maybe that's the information that we need. Because we will be here up until 4 o'clock.
Yeah, we know the time that you'll take roughly. You're not sure about the time, but there's a suggestion that we go for lunch now and then we come back. Are we agreeing?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll just go for 20 minutes. At 1 o'clock, we're back here and then we continue until we finish at 3 o'clock.
Okay, first member.
It's ready.
Food is ready outside. Yeah, food is ready outside.